Not raining down here.
It was.
Down here in downtown Chicago.
It was.
Well, snowed once downtown, too. Talking about right now.
No, it is not raining, but it was.
Very overcast.
And looks like we're going to get some more here.
Yeah, it looks like rain.
Darkening a little bit.
Yeah.
And my big toe's starting to ache.
His weather toe.
That's my weather toe. It's acting up again.
A lot of people don't know that before Tom Skilling will do a forecast, he'll ask Juani to take a picture of his toe. Enjoy your breakfast. Thanks for that visual image, by
the
way.
You're quite welcome.
You know who's here? You know.
That laugh gives it away right there.
You know
there.
Who's here.
Did you hear that great exodus of listeners?
Wow, you could almost hear the radios turning off all at the same time. Listen anyway.
They turned the transmitter down like half. It doesn't need to go that far.
why waste the power?
Yeah, right. Especially since it's raining.
Yeah.
You could get hit by thunder.
It's Mr. Got a shout out from Elton John at Soldier Field the other night.
Oh, it's becoming so blasé at this point.
You're telling me. We'll find out about the Elton John concert from Elton Gym, Toronto, coming up in a minute. 9:10 is the time.
Still standing.
This would be your Dean Richards Sunday morning broadcasting from WGN Radio in Chicago. Elton Gym, Toronto is here because Elton allegedly performed his final concert here in the Chicago area.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Farewell Yellow Brick Road tour hit the intimate Soldier Field the other night.
Yeah, right.
Although I got to say, everybody seemed to have a really nice time. All the feedback that I've heard about it, everybody had a great time, despite the fact that it was incredibly hot and humid.
Very muggy.
And
but the heat wasn't only around the stadium, it was coming from the stage.
Yeah, he was heating up those keyboards, everybody.
He was sweat. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, he's 75, and
he's
tell
got
you,
that 45-pound hairpiece on him.
The hairpiece, and he's got a 45-pound I mean, he wears these big jackets, Gucci jackets that have all these sequins. You know, that's got to be heavy.
Maybe it's air-conditioned. Maybe he's got one of those jackets that's got a cooling system.
Well, I know he took his glasses off a few times, and he was wiping his face because it was pretty hot out there. But
Andy Schwani, have you ever seen the Elton John?
The Elton John?
Never in person.
The Aerosmith?
Never. Nope.
The Led Zeppelin?
You never saw him, Shawnee?
Nope, never have.
Really?
Yeah, I never have either.
Wow. Who does a Shawnee and an Andy, where are their musical tastes lie?
Well, I'm in the 80s, so I mean, I'm stuck in the 80s. Although, you know,
yeah, but
he's got a lot,
big in the 80s.
A lot of stuff in the 80s. I've seen Billy Joel, Phil Collins. Those,
they're all
70s.
Type.
Yeah.
Chumbawamba.
Chumbawamba, a little thumping.
Howard Jones,
Andy
Thomas Dolby.
And he's past president of the Chumbawamba
fan club. Yep.
Thompson Twins.
Yeah. I don't want to brag, I've seen Elton John maybe 3 times.
Okay.
Yeah, what does that mean? does that even count?
Does that even compare?
To most people, it means normal.
And to others, it's a blip on the radar.
Yeah, not even a blip.
This was your...
You trying to impress me?
How many shows?
208.
Wow.
208. Yeah, and I had my little sign with me.
Yeah.
That my wife made. And I showed it. I think the sign thing... is actually, I'm going to take credit. Here's a surprise. I'm going to take credit for something.
Mm-hmm.
But back in 2013, when it was my 150th concert, I made a sign that said, hey, you know, it's my 150th concert. Put my name there. And he did acknowledge that. And over since this farewell tour started, I've been having signs as they've gotten closer to 200. And so I think I've actually started the trend, because now when you go to concerts, everybody has signs that say 40th show, 80th show. There's a lot of, I mean, you look at me like I'm crazy, and I'm sure
you
I
are.
Am.
And you are.
But there's certainly other people. I mean, I know a woman here in the Chicago area, Sharon. She's been to 249.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just amazing to me. It's amazing to me that that anyone would go see anybody that many times.
I mean, I wish I could
Do you get enjoyment out of
the
actual music,
when I
or
am,
is it the camaraderie of the other people?
I don't
like
even
you?
Know anybody's around me when he's on. I don't even, I mean, I feel bad when I, even when my wife is there. because I don't even know she's there.
I'm sure she's pretty used to it.
I mean,
probably welcomes it.
Every so often, I'll take a glance, but no, I am so focused, and when I'm in the whatever, like as hot as it was, and getting through all the Soldier Field parking and all that stuff, but when that show starts, I inevitably say to myself, there is nowhere else I would rather be than right where I'm at.
Well, I just wonder if it's the experience of being at still another Elton John concert. Because he's not really doing new music.
I no.
mean, it's not, you're not really hearing new things.
No.
He's got such a vast library. He plays his hits.
And he plays pretty much. He doesn't vary from the script. I mean, he plays the same show when he's on a specific tour.
Yeah, see, I would find that boring if it's
the same show. I don't know. It's something. We all, like Andy was saying, you know, we all connect with the music that we grew up with. And I was 9 years old when I first really started to listen to him, and it just never stops. And to your point about hearing the same songs, well, don't you listen to albums all the time? Don't you listen to the same songs you listen
to?
Well, I'm just saying in general.
I don't think I've, sit and listen to the same album 208 times.
Back to back to back.
Right.
No, I just and
good for you. Good
and
for
I
you
must to, say the last
if it's something that you enjoy, good for you.
Yeah, I mean everybody has their thing.
I don't get it.
Some people go to the Super Bowl every year. Some people go to, eight Bear games a year. What's the difference?
What's the difference? What's the difference?
Everybody has their own little thing.
Yeah, but Elton John gave Jim a shout out from the stage, as he's done several times
this
before.
This is about the fourth or fifth time now, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, which is cool. We'll play. Naturally, Jim sent me the clip.
Well, the scary part is, I only have tickets to two more concerts, and who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to play until 2023, but that's in Europe, so
His last shows here in the U.S. are at Dodger Stadium.
Dodger Stadium in November.
When is that?
November.
November. Are you going to go to that? What are you?
Okay, what do you think?
Well, I don't. That's why I'm
asking. Of course
asking.
I'm going. Okay. The last concerts at Dodger Stadium, where he played in 1975.
Do you have tickets for that already?
Oh, sure.
How much?
What, do you want to bet me?
No, I'm just wondering how much the last concert.
Whatever they cost, I don't know.
Over $1,000.
No. Are you kidding me? I would never. Do you hear that whole story?
500?
I think that's what they. I don't know.
Why don't you just tell me?
I'm not. Why should I tell the whole? Well, it's true. Half the people are listening now, so nobody's really hearing this. But
I'm just curious.
It's whatever it costs.
What a ticket price. What are you shy all of a sudden?
Well, no, but I mean, what do you have in your pocket? I'm not asking you how much. How much is your rent? I mean, what? I don't know why that's what's interesting is that.
I think it's interesting
when
there's a final concert. It's not about what you paid. It's the final concert in the U.S.
Yeah.
And I'm sure ticket prices are through the roof.
But I don't think they were.
I could go on Ticketmaster.com right now and find out.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought I would ask you instead and save me some time. Apparently not.
Let's just say I've spent a lot of money over the last. But 1976 was my first show.
Yeah.
So
that was good. Well, I would never think to ask how much money that you've spent. That
I would never know
would
how
be
much.
An intrusion of your privacy.
Wow, the daggers you are shooting me right now. Wow.
Just that I don't know why you're so private.
I'm that's several hundred dollars. That's how much the tickets cost.
Shawnee, your witness.
I'm here. I'm listening.
Wow, this is uncomfortable. I guess I'll leave now. Jeez.
This is so uncomfortable. Songs?
Songs?
All the hits? He did all the hits?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us a little about the show. Well, for those of us who didn't spend $700 for tickets.
Well, he comes out and...
Did you have good seats, first of all?
Oh, yeah. I was second row.
Oh. So super expensive tickets.
Here we go again. Well, it was the last show in Chicago.
Schwani, how much do you think a ticket would go for
would you say? Second row?
Second row?
Oh, got to be 1,000.
Yeah. Just under 1,000, yeah.
Right. Have you taken out a second or third mortgage to pay for all of this?
Wow. Instead of celebrating the joy of going and the excitement and
no, we
the
want to put
lifelong, you're putting, we want to know you're getting right down to this base thing of how much did it cost? I don't understand.
How much did a drink cost? Did
you have a drink? Beer, yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't have anything.
You don't have anything?
No. My wife bought some water. It was $6.25 for a bottle of water.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a little expensive.
That's expensive.
Yeah, but we milked that bottle for the whole show.
You both shared one bottle of water. You spent over $2,000 for tickets, and you wouldn't buy your wife her own bottle of water on a humid night.
I gave her most of the tickets.
You know what, honey? If you get dehydrated, you get dehydrated. Northwestern's right down there. The street.
You know how much parking was? Now that I'll tell you.
And parking is so much fun at Soldier Field anyway.
Oh, this is only my second or third time I've ever been to Soldier Field. I've only been to a couple of Bear games in my life, and I was in the south lot. $55
and pack a lunch to get there too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. But is there anywhere better to park?
Yeah, the Waldron deck, which is right outside Gate O.
Oh, is that the best? Because I saw that sign, but I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah, Waldron deck. It's that multi-leveled deck right outside of Gate O.
Oh, okay. So the south lot was actually the worst one to be in. There,
probably,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it's the biggest one. But it's, okay. Yeah.
You would think if you paid $1,000 for a ticket, they'd give you VIP parking.
Yeah, I mean $55. That is a lot. To park.
Should have tried the old I'm with the band.
Yeah.
Yeah, hold your sign up and see how far your sign.
Yeah, my sign wouldn't have gotten me very off.
See how far your sign gets you when you're trying to
sign.
Park.
Yeah, like the, and getting the shout out didn't help me get out of the parking lot any quicker.
Nope.
Not at all. In fact, I almost got the parking attendants almost called the cops on me because we were just sitting. Nobody's making a move for like 20 minutes. And these other cars are moving. And the line that I'm in to get out of this lot, it's ridiculous, is just sitting there. And I usually don't honk my horn. But we're just sitting there for 20 minutes. All these other cars are moving. And I'm like, what about us? So I honk my horn. And nothing's happening. So there's a guy in front of me from Iowa. And I'm like, you know, somebody has to make a move here. Because no one's going to let you in. On their own.
So what'd you do?
So I went around him. And then all of a sudden, this parking attendant comes flying at me. And he goes, are you crazy? Are you out of your mind? Get back or I'm calling the cops.
Wow.
And I'm like, whoa, slow down. I said, well, when are we going to go? I mean, I've been here for 20 minutes. Let us go. And then I showed him my sign. That didn't work.
Back of the line.
Yeah.
630 area code text in. Tickets at Dodger Stadium, second row, $1,906.
Okay, I'm not sitting there for
$1,906 at Dodger Stadium.
That's a lot.
And you got to get there.
And you got to pay for, I'm sure with the parking at Dodger Stadium, is probably going to be.
It's all over the place there, yeah.
Yeah.
847 area code, Dean, I'm with Elton Jim. It's none of your damn business.
Thank
what
you.
He paid for the tickets.
Right. How much did your shirt cost? I mean, what? I don't understand why that's important.
It's not what you spent out of your pocket. It's what a valuable ticket. What is the cost of a valuable ticket?
Well, That's what I was asking. Yeah. As we learned from the Bruce Springsteen dynamic pricing, it is whatever people will pay these days.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering, you know, final show in Chicago, what would the ticket price for something like that be? So that's okay if you don't want to share. Suddenly you're shy. Suddenly you're quiet and demure.
Okay. It's like, where's this guy been for the last 15 years?
Yeah, whatever. We still don't know anything about the show, though.
No, well, like I said,
paint a picture for us.
Well, beautiful stage. They built a whole new outdoor stage for this show, and he comes right out and plays the hits, Benny and the Jets, Philadelphia Freedom. A cool little aspect. There's some really cool video that they've created. Each song has its own video, which is neat. The best song, which I've always felt from the beginning of the tour back in 2018, is Someone Saved My Life Tonight, just because of the visuals. They have all these cartoons, these animation from Captain Fantastic and the Brown Recovery, which that song is from, and they play that while he's singing, and it's just very dramatic, and he really plays the hell out of that song. But there's other, almost every song, like I said, the show is very scripted and very technical in terms of the songs and the video with it, so he really can't stray very much from the thing. But he does play a good cross section, and he even plays that Cold Heart song, you know, his number one song with Oompa Loompa, whatever.
Dua
Lipa, which is weird because he plays the recorded, like the musical part, track.
Her part's recorded.
Her part. But even the music is just like da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun. So he doesn't know what to do, because he, for a guy that has amazing musical talent, he really has no rhythm. And he doesn't know. When you get him away from that piano, he can't move. He can't. When he tries to dance or stand with a microphone and sing.
Has that always been the case?
Yeah, he's very awkward.
Now in his older years.
No, it's just, it's always been like that.
Well, we're going to play the clip of Elton John giving Elton Jim a shout-out later on. And I've got investigators checking this whole ticket price scandal. We've got the WGN investigative team working on that.
Anna DeVantes is working on
it. Right. In the meantime, though, here's something where information flows freely.
And it's free.
Nothing is held back. It's the weekly far-flung forecast with Mr. Dave, Benny and the Jets, Schwann.
Thank you, Uncle Dean. Friends and neighbors, get your compasses and protractors ready.
Yeah. Since
because
you were here
today,
last time, Jim, we now do Google Earth. When Schwanny does the far-flung
forecast. Watch how you say that.
We go on Google Earth so we can, you know, it's more participatory.
To see
way.
Where?
To see exactly
yeah,
where
we
he's
had listeners text in saying that they're on their GPS to look for the locations.
Right. Because I did it a couple of weeks ago with you.
Today, we actually go out to Long Island in New York to Cove Neck, New York.
I love anything with a neck in it.
Cove Neck, New York. Cove Neck actually is a town within a town. It's in the larger town of Oyster Bay in Nassau County.
On
the north shore of Long Island. Population 286. Mm-hmm. Cove Neck, New York. A wonderful, serene, quiet little place.
Cove Neck, New York.
Which also happens to have been the home of our 26th president, Theodore Roosevelt. He lived in Sagamore Hill. In fact, he died at the home there. It's now a National Historic Site. He is buried on the grounds, but we bring up Theodore Roosevelt because it was on this date, and it was great. 110 years ago today, Theodore Roosevelt became the nominee for president for the Progressive Party, better known as the Bull Moose Party, and it took place right here in Chicago.
Right here in the great city of Chicago.
Down on South Wabash Avenue at the Coliseum. And we not only know this, get this, we have Theodore Roosevelt recorded.
What?
In from 1912, and this was the premise of his speech.
A lot of people had their iPhones that night.
The great fundamental issue now before our people can be speaking to. It is, are the American people fit to govern themselves, to rule themselves, to control themselves? I believe they are. My opponents do not. I believe in the right of the people to rule. I believe that the majority of the plain people of the United States will, day in and day out, make fewer mistakes in governing themselves than any smaller class or body of men, no matter what their training, will make in trying to govern them.
Now, he made...
I would not have expected Theodore Roosevelt to sound like
that. Oh, very much so. A native New Yorker? Sure.
I thought he would sound more gruff.
Yeah. More gruff.
His voice is a little higher pitched than
I would have. Rough rider.
Schwanny, do we know how much the tickets cost for the Coliseum that night?
No, I don't know. In between the prize fights there, right?
Well, we'll go on Google.
But Roosevelt lost the Republican nomination to William Howard Taft that year, and he was upset about it, so he formed his own party. And the reason they called it the Bull Moose Party was because he told reporters that he felt fit as a bull moose. So that is why that was the name of the Progressive Party, and lost the election to Woodrow Wilson that year. But Cove Neck, New York, they've got a heat advisory there today. It's 82 already, going up to 90 degrees today.
Chicago's very own WGN. Hey, so sister, ain't that Mr. Mister on the radio?
938. Richard Sunday morning. Elton Jim, fresh off of his 208th Elton John concert over at the Soldier Field. Also joining us this morning, we'll hear more about the concert. We'll hear what details Jim cares to share with us about the concert coming up later on. But now it's one of our favorite times of the week, when we can chat with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern's Central DuPage Hospital. Mr. Dr. Most, welcome in. Nice to,
Mr. Doctor.
Nice to talk to you.
Got any more titles there?
Good morning.
I was going to say, morning, you guys. Mr. Most, and I remembered he's a doctor. That I should be calling him Dr. Most instead. So is monkeypox the biggest thing we should be worrying about right now?
No.
It just seems like, oh, really? Okay.
No, I still think we should be certainly still more worried about BA5 and COVID and what's going to go on when school comes back, and the impact of Lollapalooza and Elton John concerts and things like that.
Right,
certainly I think the education factor for monkeypox is important. I wouldn't be everybody rushing in arms being concerned about it right now.
So, when you watch the news, you just hear stories about how super contagious this is now. And there are shortages of vaccines. So people should not be concerned about getting vaccinated for the monkeypox?
Well, I think that really when you look at the vaccine, it's interesting. When we look at COVID vaccine, we have so much of it that, you know, you have to be careful walking into a pharmacy or you might get a COVID vaccine. Where with monkeypox, it's the exact opposite. Obviously, the population that has a higher chance of exposure certainly needs to be vaccinated. And the logistics of getting the vaccines in the right place is one thing, but also the limits of the volume of vaccine. So it'll be really interesting this week. You know, the FDA put in to look at, instead of taking a full dose of the vaccine, can we split that up into 5 doses? And instead of, you know, giving the needle deeper into the arm, just give it superficially so that we can do 5 times the amount of individuals vaccinated and still get the immune response that we need to slow the spread of this.
So the depth of the needle plays a role?
Absolutely. So, you know, when we get a lot of vaccines, we give them what we call IM, so into the muscle, into that deltoid muscle. You know, we want to make sure we get it below this layer of the skin. Well, the skin is highly vascular, so that distributing this vaccine just below the skin, we expect to get a really big immune response. Individuals who used to get polio vaccines, you remember, you used to have that little mark on your arm.
Right.
And that was because we put that there at that point to get this big immune response. So it'll be interesting to see if it gets approved. Certainly something we need, as the amount of individuals who want to get this vaccine certainly outnumber the availability of the vaccine.
So how is monkeypox spread now? Is it a skin-to-skin contact?
Yeah, it's more direct contact, skin-to-skin, secretions to secretions. So, you know, being in a room with an individual where for COVID we're very concerned, the exact opposite for monkeypox. Unless you have direct contact with that individual, very close contact, the chance of you getting it is very small. Now, that being said, the virus will make these lesions on your skin that break open and have a lot of active virus. So direct contact with that certainly allows for spread.
Okay. All right. So just, you know, everybody be careful for now with all of that. Where are we now with COVID and BA5 and transmission rates? I know in certain parts of the country are over 40%, right?
Yeah, you look at the entire country. If you took every county in the entire country, over 40% of them are at the high transmission rate. That would have been unheard of if we went back, you know, 3-4 months, where even around here in Chicago, we were at the low to mild transmission rate. So certainly we're seeing the impact of BA5. and how well and how easily it spreads. So the big concern, I think, is going to be what's going to go on when we open the schools here in just a couple of weeks and have a lot of children back in that environment with low vaccination rates. Are we going to see another large bump in the adult population as well?
Yeah, as we start going back inside when the weather begins to get colder again as well, that's going to be an issue. All of that with the prospect of this new booster shot, which everyone is saying is going to come sometime in September. A lot of people holding off on getting a second booster shot because they want to wait to get the new and improved shot. And, you know, I know that question is going to come up 20 times on our text line this morning. Should people wait?
Yeah, Dean, you know, if you think last time we spoke, we were saying, hey, we're going to get the approval for those under the age of 50 to get that second booster. Well, not only didn't that come, it came in the opposite, saying, no, we're going to hold off and we want you individuals to wait until the new vaccine comes out. And when I say new vaccine, people need to understand that the new vaccine is going to be the original COVID vaccine, but also have protection from BA5, which is this dominant strain that's running rampant right now. So the window of opportunity for us to get that out there is fairly small, right? Look at the number of cases that are happening right now. By the time we distribute it, is BA5 going to be so widely spread that the vaccine doesn't have as much impact as we would hope it would if it were available today? So I'll tell you, you know, I don't whether to say it's missteps or communication, but certainly our decisions on vaccines overall will certainly be looked at in Monday morning quarterbacks for decades to come.
Yeah, it's a little bit hard to believe that, you know, over the past 2.5 years, it's almost as if we haven't learned anything about how to distribute all of this, how to make decisions about it, who should be making the decisions about all of this. Do you agree?
Well, you know, we certainly have had some brilliant minds doing it, and we certainly had restrictions on the logistics of how do we get this there. If you remember, initially we had to have this super frozen, you know, we had hospitals buying special freezers for this, and now you can walk into the CVS and get a shot without even, you know, waiting. So certainly we've had some learnings that has allowed us to get the distribution much wider. But certainly from an overall point of view, we're going to be looking back and saying, what did we learn? What could we have done better? Because that list is fairly long.
Yeah, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and get to as many of your questions as possible. Text or phone 312-981-7200. 948, Dr. Kevin Most, Central DuPage Hospital on the line with us as always to answer your questions, 312-981-7200. Kev, I don't know if you heard, the news just came over about a half an hour ago that President Biden now has been officially cleared to emerge from isolation following his rebound COVID-19 case. Talk to me a little bit about the rebound COVID.
Yeah, it's interesting, Dean. When we look at the number of people who have been put on Paxlovid, the medication that can slow the spread of this illness, that a small portion of them get what we call a rebound case. They come back, and all of a sudden, they're testing positive again. Some have more mild symptoms. The president had very mild symptoms on the rebound. But we're still trying to figure out why is that. Is it that the medication didn't work? Is it they got re-exposed? Well, in the president's case, you could probably say that the medication didn't work as well as it was supposed to. But certainly those individuals, the other 95% who are not getting the rebound case, look at this medication as a medication that certainly has decreased the amount of symptoms, the length of symptoms, and has made them much more comfortable quicker than had they not taken it.
The president's physician wrote in a letter released about a half an hour ago this morning, the president's SARS-CoV-2 antigen testing was negative for a second day. He will safely return to public engagement and presidential travel. Is that what's safe? I mean, when you come out of COVID like he did, how long do you wait after that? How many tests do you have to have? What's the proper and safe protocol following?
Yeah, well, right. But we're actually telling people not to test, right? We're telling people, hey, somewhere between 5 and 7 days after your initial onset, if you don't have symptoms and you're fever-free, don't worry about it. Now, he's being overly cautious and is being tested every day. But we know that some people will be testing positive for 10 days, 20 days, 30 days, even when, in fact, they may not be contagious. So So we're not looking for everybody to chase that negative test, but certainly to use common sense as far as, are they still symptomatic? Are they still coughing? Do they still have a fever? Those cases, certainly, I don't care whether you're day 5, day 7, day 10, you certainly need to continue to be quarantined or isolated. The president did exactly what he was supposed to do, right? Isolated himself, worked, essentially virtually for the past, 7 to 10 days, and is now tested negative twice. So very good that he's doing and setting a great example for us. But I think the general public needs to know we don't need to continue to chase that negative test because the cost of it and the accuracy of it is quite low.
Here's Pete. You're on with Dr. Kevin Most on WGN.
Hi there, Dr. Most. My question is about, I'm wondering what the transmission would be with, let's say, for instance, it's raining out and now the surface is wet. Somebody sits down and there's previous person had an open sore from the monkeypox, and the person sits down, and I'm wondering if it could be spread that way.
Pete, you hit on a very good point that we understand that monkeypox can be transmitted by individuals who touch surfaces with an open lesion, and then it's followed up by touching a lesion shortly thereafter by someone who is not infected. So totally different than COVID, where we were microwaving our mail and washing everything with bleach. Certainly with monkeypox, we know that there can be that transmission by touching an inert object, not just the individual themselves. So you need to be aware of your environment, who's around you that potentially has this illness, and especially those with the open sores and the open rash.
Thank you for the call. The 847 area code, I'm 66 years old. I went in for a third booster as my last was in April. The pharmacist said they have not approved a third booster yet. My main shot and two boosters were all Pfizer. Is that true, what they're saying?
No, that's true. So, right now we have the regular series. The first two are the one Johnson & Johnson, and two boosters have been approved after that. So a third booster has not been approved yet. Will that be approved? My opinion, it will be, especially when the new vaccine is rolled out, because you're going to have a lot of people that are going to be anxious to get that coverage and that protection for the BA5, which will be found in that vaccine. But currently, right now, a third booster is not approved.
So when I was at Lollapalooza, I saw very few masks out in the crowd. What about the Elton John concert, Jim?
Not a mask to be found.
Interesting. Okay.
Not a mask to be found.
In these large group settings, Kev, where people are dancing and singing and jubilant, potential super spreader events?
Absolutely. And the risks for the two groups are actually kind of interesting and different. If you went to Lollapalooza and there's 10 bands playing, you don't know the words, but certainly we're jamming this group of individuals as close as possible. We're serving them alcohol, and it's a demographic that feels that they're pretty much, invincible. So certainly a great potential there. Look at the Elton John concert, and, not to make a difference of the demographics, but probably an older demographic. But interestingly enough, probably know every single word of every single song and sang along with him for these. So again, the chance of spreading virus, out while you're singing, yelling, screaming, much higher. So the protection in the Elton John concert, I bet you if you asked everybody who walked in how many of them were vaccinated, you'd probably be well north of, 60% of people. At Lollapalooza, you're probably closer to 30%. So both of them have potential, but for two different reasons and two different demographics.
Now,
so,
when I was crowd surfing at Lollapalooza.
When you were in the mosh pit.
When I was in the mosh pit. I was wearing my mask. I was protected then, right? When I was being passed hand over hand through the crowd.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, you had 100% protection.
So as you say, the chance to spread COVID would be more during Crocodile Rock, then I guess that's why they call it the blues, in terms of people knowing the lyrics, or...
100%. I mean, look, you've been to 208 of these. You probably know that people think that their voice is just as good as Elton John's and want to sing along with him.
Well, listen to my voice. Listen to my hoarse voice today. What do you think I was doing?
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, you're with those people all the time. That's like
we're immune.
What did you call it? You know, when you were with your family during the worst of the pandemic, and you stayed within your own social group. You know, your family. That's you with
right exactly
70,000 people right. at Soldier Field. The 847 area code said, I'm leaving September 21st for a driving trip through the Smokies. When do I get my second booster? If you're going on vacation, when should you get your second booster?
Yeah, right now, I would guess say if you're eligible for that second booster, get it now. You know, what we're really trying to do is protect you from the BA5. Now, excuse me, we know that the BA5, even with the second booster, you can get it, but you're going to have much milder symptoms and a shorter duration of illness. If you're going to be driving, especially, it's interesting, you know, you're going to be in a car, hopefully with just individuals you know. You're going to be going to hotels, you know. So it really, your exposure is not going to be similar to a concert. But certainly you should try to get your protection rate up as high as it can, and that would be with the vaccine as soon as possible.
Very good. Dr. Kevin Most is the Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Kev, I hope you have a great day today. Thank you so much, as always.
You got it, team.
How are you today, Shawnee?
I'm good.
I feel like I've neglected you today.
Oh, that's nothing new in the past, say, 41 years.
41 years.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yes, it is. I try to be a nice guy and be concerned.
And how's your big toe?
I'm doing well today. Thank you.
How's my big toe? How's your big toe?
This is what I get back.
It's a lot better now that the rain has moved away.
Shawnee looking, when I went to the news department, you know, Andy is always very casual.
Yeah.
But Shawnee doing the shorts today.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a hot weekend. So
two
I just.
2 weeks in a row.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I never saw Shawnee with the shorts on.
Last week was his exposure of gams.
With the light shawl.
And I was complimented.
Yeah, he's got a nice set.
And he's got the t-shirt. Last week he had the shorts on. And a babushka or something. I forget what he had on, but it didn't make
sense.
It didn't make sense what he was wearing, but today he's in full summer gear.
Yeah, he looked quite the... I thought he was going to play a round of tennis or something. Yeah. Looked all, you know.
Also, speaking of last week, by the way, all I heard all week from people is how much they... We were talking about how the smell of marijuana is everywhere downtown.
I heard it was in New York.
That's
about it myself.
All I heard about this week from our pothead listeners.
Well, I predicted that because when I went to Amsterdam 2 or 3 years ago, before it was legalized here in Illinois, and that's all I smelled.
Yeah,
walking around. And even when people would walk past you, you would smell it on them.
Yeah.
And I said, when it gets legalized here, get ready. You are going to smell it
everywhere. I smelled it walking into this building here this morning.
Oh, nice.
I'm walking just across the street, and I smell the devil's weed smoke.
And now, remember, like, you'd go to a bar, and, you know, back in the smoking days when you could smoke, you know, cigarettes in a bar, and your coat would always, you'd come home, and it would smell like, now your coat smells like marijuana from people. Not that they're smoking it in there, but just it's on them. It must be much more of a scent that stays with you.
We had a full investigation on this.
Oh, yeah?
And apparently the quality of the weed
is so good.
It will leave a certain smell. If you have cheap weed, that's the stinkies. Super stinky.
Oh, really?
The better the weed, the better the smell.
Ah.
Apparently.
Well, there's a lot of bad weed out there then.
It's like skunky beer, you know?
It's like skunky
beer. Yeah, exactly.
It's like skunky beer.
Yeah.
And I do not want to reopen the subject, by the way. I'm just saying, that's all I heard all week long was about
weed. I heard about it myself.
Our weed-filled Sunday morning listeners aired today. Rockin' Man. Certainly will go down as one of the most memorable concerts of 2022, Elton John's final Chicago appearance, allegedly.
51st in Chicago.
There's so many artists that say, this is my farewell tour. I'm not coming back. I'm not. You think Elton means it?
You know, at first I didn't because he loves the applause. Even at the show the other night, he's walking up and down the stage. And people are clapping, and he's like, come on, more, more, more. I mean, he just loves the applause.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, when he talks about leaving, when this tour started in 2018, I felt it was like, you know, because they said that he might do a residency, like when this tour, he doesn't want to tour where he's always traveling, but to do a residency like in Vegas or, you know, in New York and stay there in one town for a week or something, I thought that would be a possibility. But now that COVID delayed things 2 years and he's going to be 76, and when he talks about this being the end and he talks about wanting to spend time with his husband David and his two kids, it really sounds sincere.
Yeah.
And I'm really wondering that he's really soaking this in. I mean, we talk about these shout-outs that he's been giving to me and other people over the last couple of years. I think he's taking it in. I think he's being appreciative to these people that he may have noticed and seen, these fans. But I really think if he I'll probably take a year off, I would assume. So then you're 78 years old. I mean, do you want to just spend time with your kids? He's got, you know, that by that time they'll be teenage kids. I really think he's not going to tour or even, he may perform every so often at a place.
Right, that's what it seems like. And, you know, it's really obvious. I mean, in this clip that I'm about to play, he does give Jim, Elton Jim Toronto, who's here this morning, a shout-out. But you can hear him. I mean, he's kind of reflecting on his Chicago concerts, his touring history. Take a listen. This is from Soldier Field the other night.
And tonight is the 246th show on the Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour. And my first time here at Soldier Field and my 51st concert in Chicago. My first concert here was November the 25th, 1970 at the Auditorium Theatre. And tonight is my 67th concert in Illinois. And it will be my last. My sons and David are here tonight, and they're the reason that I don't want to tour anymore, because I'll be 76 next year when I stop, and I just want to spend the rest of my life enjoying them, okay? But I won't forget you. How can I forget you guys? You give me everything. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be sitting up here. You bought the records, the CDs, the cassettes, the albums, the 8-tracks, but more important, as I always say, the ticket to the concerts, because I love to play live more than anything else. And all of you who dressed up tonight, I can see you over there, down there, with the glasses on. You guys. And for all of you who've been to multiple shows, like Jim here in the front, who's been to 208, I can't believe you can stand that amount of time watching me, but he's amazing. I want to wish you love and happiness and health. Be kind to each other. And remember, I take you with me in my heart and my soul. And I love you very, very much. Thank you for all the love you've given me, all the loyalty.
It's nice. That's very nice.
Yeah, that's right. And then he plays Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Nice shout out for you.
Yeah, so it's very cool. I wasn't expecting it necessarily. I brought my little sign with me. That's how he knew that I had 208 shows. But you never know. I mean, I was shocked when my wife and I went to London in July to see him play at Watford, where he used to own that's his football team, his favorite soccer team. And that was very special shows that he did there. And he actually pointed me out again and said, you know, he came all the way from, he goes, he's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know.
Has it occurred to you that maybe he's pointing you out so his security knows where you are?
The security does know me. Dave, the security guy, does know me.
Yeah, he's just pointing out, he's right there, guys. I see him. He's right there. Keep an eye on him.
But it's been a very
Do you get dressed up? Talk about the people who get dressed up.
I bring those glasses, you know, the glasses I have of his, you know, the white glasses that you've seen that I wear when we go to to tree time. But I don't wear all the boas. And I mean, now I could only imagine at Dodger Stadium, because right now one of the most popular Halloween costumes is his sequined Dodger
Dodgers base
that he wore in 75,
right?
That was designed by Bob Mackie, and now that is one of the most popular. I mean, you can buy that online as a Halloween costume. Yeah. So now at the concerts, a lot of people wearing that. I can only imagine at Dodger Stadium I mean, everyone's going to probably be wearing
those. Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, but, course. But no, I don't wear the boas and stuff like that.
Now, I'm not asking you because I know you don't want to talk about it, but I'm just wondering what that's going to be. Dodger Stadium will be his final
in the U.S.
show in the U.S.
on this tour. Yeah,
right.
But he may play, like I said, who knows? He may do another show. But, I mean, if you heard that, it was kind of obscured. But he did say this is my 67th show in Illinois, and it will be my last. So, yeah. You know, I mean, he's...
Kind of sad to hear him actually say that.
It is very sad. This
very
has been...
makes me melancholy.
Yeah, it's very bittersweet because I'm still, like I said, I only have now, you know... It's hard for me to believe that I won't be seeing him... in concert. It's been such a major part of my life for the past, you know, 30 or 40 years. And so, yeah, it's fun at the moment. But then when it's done, you go, okay, well, now another one is gone. And
who do you think you'll be stalking next?
I'll tell you, I'm going to be saving a lot, to your point about the money. I don't think I'll be going to concert. I mean, I may go to some concerts, but that's...
Oh, you'll be able to put air conditioning in your house.
Are you kidding? Crank it. Let's go. And the heat and the heat. I'll even go crazy and put heat on in the winter. I might forget about all that layering. Forget, take the hooded sweatshirts and the socks off. Let's go nuts.
Okay, so I went to Ticketmaster.com okay. while you were talking.
You're such an investigative reporter now since you had the big scoop about Lollapalooza being here for 10 years.
I'm the Pam Zekman of the entertainment world now.
Yeah, Google that.
Yep. Yeah, for your kids, for anyone under 50, Google that. Tickets right in front of the stage, which I presume that's where you want to be, right?
I hope to be.
Of course. Tickets right in front of the stage, section D, row... Oh, you don't want row 20.
20?
That's too far.
I might as well stay home.
Row 9?
9's not bad.
9's not bad? Yeah. $1,600.
And that's at Dodger Stadium?
Dodger Stadium. Yeah. This is on Ticketmaster.
Yeah.
Row...
But I bought mine a year and a half ago, so I am not going... So these are now going up in price.
This is interesting. Row 20, further away, $2,129.
Well, see, that's my point. Because you have to understand now, Ticketmaster is reselling tickets.
Hmm.
You know, these are not face value tickets. These are tickets that are being resold.
Okay.
So somebody's asking that.
All right. Well, this is the you know, the going price, though, apparently.
Yeah.
Row 5, $4,191.
What is first row going for?
Section D. This is right in front of the stage, first row. $7,494.
Now, even that's crazy. Now, it's not crazy, but no, I'm joking. No, I would never. Like I'm really seriously. I have seen Bruce Springsteen every tour since 1980.
Yeah.
But with this dynamic pricing, I do not have tickets right now. I may not go see. I can't justify paying $2,500 to see a concert for one ticket.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
To just stay home and watch the Supremes on Ed Sullivan's show.
Yeah, on MeTV.
Hey, Andy, are you in the middle of anything?
No.
I read something that Andy wrote this week about the passing of Vin Scully.
Yeah.
Oh.
The legendary broadcaster Vin Scully.
Great guy.
Which is one of the best things that I've ever read. It's phenomenal.
Oh, thank you.
Can we talk about that when
Absolutely.
We come back from a quick break here?
WGN. Hit to left field, down the line, in the corner, home run.
The legendary Vin Scully passed away this week. How many years, Andy, reporting and calling play-by-play for the L.A. Dodgers?
No, just 67.
How about that?
Yeah. Moved with the team from Brooklyn. He was started in Brooklyn in 1950. The first lineup that he called a game for had Pee Wee Reese leading off, and Jackie Robinson was in the lineup as well.
Wow. That's amazing. But the consummate professional, I mean, that's all that I knew. Anytime that I had heard clips of the great Vin Scully, he was just so polished and professional, and he painted such pictures with his words.
a little bit different from the homespun style that Harry Carey had, say. Some Chicago broadcasters had put out there through the years. I mean, just a completely different thing. So when he passed away this week, you know, I was reading some of the stories about his career, and Andy wrote, it was for a blog, I think, right?
I write for, it's called Barrett Sports Media. It's an industry website that a lot of broadcasters go to read about things.
So, and we sports broadcasters, we love to read that.
We love to read that stuff.
But I had no idea the impact that Vin Scully had on you.
Oh, yeah.
And you so beautifully put into words in this blog. Paying tribute to one of your idols.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because he did football and tennis even before I realized he was a baseball guy, because he called a couple of Bears games on CBS back in the day, and you know, you get to know the voice, and then you know, I get into this field, and in 2004 I was with the Cubs in our broadcast booth. I had mentioned in passing to Pat Hughes that I'd really like to meet Vin. I hadn't met him yet, and I had a ball that I wanted to have him sign, the ultimate geek thing that I wanted to do, and I thought nothing of it, and Pat finally motioned me over after the game ended, and we went into the private dining room for the Dodgers broadcasters. And Vin, you know, being the gentleman that he is, he stood up, I mean, to say hello to me, shake my hand. Wow. I mean, I'd never really met him before. I'd seen him around. He'd seen me. And then, you know, he's asking me questions. He goes, yeah, I understand you're doing some play-by-play. I'm like, yeah. He goes, how's it going? And I'm like, well, he says, keep at it. You'll be great. You'll be great. And I'm like, okay, thanks. And, he signed the ball, and fast forward, when I was with the Padres in 2013 at Petco Park, there's a ramp that goes down to the broadcast booths, and it's kind of a blind turn to go to the radio booth and the TV booth for the visitors right next door, and I almost literally ran into him because you couldn't see around the corner. The only thing that saved me and him was the fact that he, to warm up his voice, he hummed. And he'd hum out loud walking up and down the hallways.
Oh, is that funny?
To get ready for a broadcast.
Yeah, you warm up your vocal cords.
Yeah. And I heard him humming, and I stopped, so I knew that it was him. And I didn't injure him at that point. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be known as that guy. But you know, Vin was old school in many respects, but I think that his style can still work today. If people that were running broadcasts for baseball teams would realize that fans don't only gravitate to the crazy viral moments. They gravitate to warm, friendly voices that they can count on every summer to be there to call the games for their beloved baseball team. And that's Vin.
And he would tell great stories.
He was great.
While he was, I mean, that was the art, too, is he would tell these great stories, but he would still not get in the way of the game.
And that's the mastery of being able to do games because, and this sounds really stupid, but he knew the ending of the story. So basically what happens is you can bypass the middle parts if you get caught up in a double play and the inning comes to an end and you want to finish the story. He can go right to the end of it and you would think that was the story, so without missing anything. But he worked alone for the last 20, 25 years in the TV booth. So whenever there was something going on in the field that maybe needed somebody to bounce things off of, he was the only one up there, and he was very, very versed at filling the time and still making it very interesting.
I thought it was very telling that, he retires, and then, what was it, a year or two later?
Yeah, a year later.
The Dodgers now are in the World Series.
And there's a petition started by Dodgers fans because they wanted him on the call of the World Series instead of Joe Buck.
Right.
And Joe Buck was actually on board. And Fox actually did approach Vin, and he said, nope, I'm retired.
I'm retired.
I don't need to seek the glory. I don't need to seek the limelight. I've called enough of these.
Telling. Yeah. That's so telling of the man's true spirit.
Yeah, he was a great guy.
His true
He was great with Joe Garagiola.
He was fantastic with Garagiola. Yeah. He was fantastic with Don Drysdale. When he passed away, that's when Vin decided not to work with anybody again.
Yeah.
How much is that ball worth that he signed?
Yeah, what'd you get for it on eBay?
Much was that ball worth, Andy?
Did you get that thing on eBay after he signed it for it?
Not be leaving my possession as long as I'm around. That's
count the headlights on the highway.
10:30, 16 Richard, Sunday morning, WGN. Post Elton John concert at the Soldier Field. Elton Jim Toronto in with us this morning. But I'm not playing this for you. This is not because of the Elton
John. You're not?
This is not for you for the Elton John concert.
Oh, well, look at
it,
you.
It ties in with our next guest on the show, who is the vice president of the board of Chicago Dancers.
Oh, so she's the tiny dancer.
United. She is a former dancer with Hubbard Street Dance Chicago and the co-founder
of River North Dad Chicago, but is now the vice president of the board that's putting on the Dance for Life benefit that will be taking place next Saturday. Dance for Life is the show that brings together some of the best dance companies in Chicago, all on one stage, all on one night, and all for a great cause. I hosted this Dance for Life for the first 20 years of its existence.
Wow.
It was, you know, quite an event.
Did you do jazz hands?
I never actually... Well, actually, you know what? I did perform in the show a couple of times as a joke. I mean, my thing was...
You're not...
When I say the greatest dance companies in Chicago, to say that I was part of any of that is an insult to all the dancers that actually...
You're not Fosse-esque?
Mine was more like if you watch Tim Conway do a dance number on the Carol Burnett Show. My dancing was all purely comedic.
You're not Tommy Toon?
The years that I did all of that, but... it sounds like it's going to be another great show that they have coming up at the Auditorium Theater. And Julie, thank you for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
So,
I think you did really, you did jazz hands very, very well.
Thank you.
Remember,
there you go.
Thank you. Yeah.
See?
Well, you know, maybe one of these years, you know, you want to bring it back again, you know, and have me return to the stage.
I could see you doing a Gene Kelly walk, singing in the rain with the umbrella and the puddles. No?
I'm all over that. You are going to rue the day that you said this. I'm going to make that happen.
There you go.
You know what? But Jim means he would actually like to see me out in the street in an actual puddle during a thunderstorm, if possible, with lightning. This is the 31st annual Dance for Life that will be taking place next Saturday, 6 p.m. at the Auditorium Theater. And, you know, the tagline of this whole thing for all of these years have been the very best Chicago dance companies all in one place in one night. So you get to see, you know, one after another after another. Tell us, Julie, who's going to be performing this year?
So this year we have 8 works that will be done. We have Chicago Dance Crash. We have Deeply Rooted Dance Theater, who've not performed on this stage with us since 2008. We have Ensemble Español, Spanish Dance Theater.
They're amazing.
We have Ensemble Giordano Dance Chicago.
Yeah.
The Joffrey Ballet, Najwa Dance Corps, and it's their first time. Trinity Irish Dance Company. And then, of course, the incomparable Randy Duncan doing a world premiere finale with a mixture of artists from a multitude of different dance companies, as well as independent artists.
Yeah, choreographer Randy Duncan takes dancers from all of the different dance companies and puts them together for what is always a moving and rousing grand finale to the night. But several of these dance companies have been performing in every Dance for Life, many of them performing multiple times, like Ensemble Español, that they do a version of Bolero, the song Bolero, in just one of the most moving dance performances that I've ever seen. Then Governor Pat Quinn was standing backstage with me while they were performing Bolero. He was going to be coming on next to, to whatever governors do at events like that.
The jitterbug.
But he and I did a big swing number. he turned to me at one point. He said, "That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen," because it is a very moving performance that they do. And Giordano Dance Chicago is amazing. Joffrey, you know, do we have to say anything? It's one of the most world-renowned dance companies in the world, you know, that will be performing. Trinity Irish Dance Company is fantastic. So it's all a fantastic lineup that you've got set. What else is going to be happening that night? Now, it's the performance itself, but then there are some other things going on as well, right?
Right. And I mean, I think one of the big things to remember is that this is a fundraiser for the Dancers Fund, which gives 2 different grants, one a critical need grant and one a health and wellness grant to anyone in the Chicago professional dance industry that's in need of financial relief around medical expenses. So, I mean, to me, this is the point that I really want to drive home, is Chicago has such an incredibly unique dance community. It's one where we all love each other. We support each other. This event is unique to Chicago. It's not done anywhere else in the country. And it raises money for an extraordinary cause. So, A, it's great to go see the entertainment value of seeing all of these dance companies in one place, but also with the knowledge that you are helping us raise funds so that we can keep our dance community healthy and bringing us joy.
Yeah, this whole thing started back during the very worst of the HIV/AIDS crisis.
Yes.
That was hitting the dance community particularly hard. And, you know, dancers don't always have insurance. They're not always, they don't always have full-time employment, either with their dance companies or if they have a day job. So, you know, they're living paycheck to paycheck. And during the worst of the HIV/AIDS crisis, when this was a death sentence, it was ravaging the dance community, and that's why this whole thing started in the first place. But as the HIV and AIDS health issue evolved and changed and is now controllable, like diabetes, basically, so has the Dancers Fund, and now covers all kinds of health issues for dancers who are in need of help, who may not have insurance, right, Julie?
Correct. Or limited insurance.
And you ever think about it? I mean, you know, they get injured just like athletes. They are athletes. So I'm sure there's knee problems and ankle problems and arthritis and things like that that any athlete would go through. Dancers, you don't think of that, but they have those same kind of medical needs.
Right. Right. Not to mention cancer, heart issues.
Yes.
I mean, much more, you know, not that a physical injury is
right. No, but I'm just saying all part of it.
That is definitely part of it. But often, I mean, I've heard nightmare stories of dancers that I got to know from hosting this event for 20 years who suddenly they were diagnosed with cancer or, you know, something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were debilitated and in the hospital. And thank goodness for Chicago Dancers United, who came to their aid to help them with those kinds of things.
Right. And during COVID, we recognized the fact that there was a need not just for critical health, critical care aid, but also that we wanted to ensure health and wellness, which is another direction we really want to move forward in and help with insurance premium copays, mental health visits, a myriad dental costs. So not just the critical need, but also just we want to keep our Chicago dancers healthy. And one of the other extraordinary things about Dance for Life is that this is a completely volunteer evening. So these dance companies recognize and want to help their fellow dance industry professionals, and they do all of this through volunteerism, which I just think is extraordinary.
Yep. Yeah, that's something that always impressed me through all this. It's hard work. I mean, being a dancer is really hard work. But coordinating an event like this and the actual physical work that goes into coordinating an event, all these dance companies all in the same place at the same time, and they all have to rehearse, and they all have lighting requirements, right, Julie? And music issues that there's a lot of plates that are spinning backstage while the show is going on.
And leg warmers. And you need leg warmers.
Well, I needed. That was mostly for me.
But that's, you know, the other piece of it, and you saw this firsthand, is that there is such joy and fun and excitement and passion that goes on in this evening. And as an audience member, it is the highlight of the year for me.
Yeah.
It is so much fun. I hope people go and have this opportunity to see all of these extraordinary dancers perform.
Right. I have a couple of more questions, so hang on a second. I need to take a break first, and we'll come back and talk more about Dance for Life, which will be Saturday, next Saturday, August the 13th, 6 p.m., Auditorium Theater downtown. Tell you how you can get tickets and how you can
you know, do all of that. Jim, I would show up for 20 years. I show up, you know, ready to do my big flash dance number.
Right. With the, you had your water ready.
I had the bucket of water ready.
And your folding chair.
Every year I'm thinking somebody's going to, you know, call out of the show. Last minute, some emergency. I'm going to get my chance.
You're ready.
To go on stage. What a feeling.
Da, 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 da.
Right. Never happened. Never happened. We'll be right back. WGN. Julie Berman Kaplan is on the line with us, who is the vice chair of Dance for Life, the big dance benefit performance that will take place next Saturday, August the 13th, at the Auditorium Theater. Back inside, right, Julie?
At the Auditorium. Yeah. Amen.
Yeah, last year it was at the Pritzker Pavilion.
Yes, which was a great experience for us to be able to be outside and offer a venue where we could have lots of people come and just drop by free and watch the performance. And we got very lucky with our weather.
Right.
That's the one, yeah.
But it is outside, and, you know, that's, you know, it's weather dependent. For years, we did the show over at the Skyline Stage at Navy Pier,
yep.
Which is also outside, and some nights, you know, some nights we did have a couple of performances where it was pouring, raining. You know, it was covered, but still it was pouring, raining, or super hot and humid. But, you know, boats would be coming by and blowing their horns, and,
right.
You know, there were a million things going on. Now you are back in a theater that was built for live performance, for exactly this kind of performance, the Auditorium. And I can only imagine, you know, preparing for all of this, you know, must be extra special in this extremely historic place.
It is. We're so happy to be back at the Auditorium Theater. There's, you know, it is such a magnificent space.
So a texter on our line from the 815 area code said, "Can I bring a 9 and 6-year-old to Dance for Life?" Now, just based on my history with the show, it's perfect for 9 and 6-year-olds. You know, if you have kids who are interested in dance, this is the show to bring them to, because they're going to see all different styles of dance, and it always has been family friendly, unless you've taken a turn for the blue, Julie. I imagine that's
no.
After hours show.
That might be Dan Stevens, by the way.
Yeah, which already took place, which was amazing, by the way.
Yes, it was phenomenal. Dance for Life is absolutely great for any age group.
Yeah, I mean, my experience with this is, you know, they'll see ballet, they'll see modern dance, they'll see, you know, kind of hip-hop and, you know, a much more modern style of dance that, you know, kids are probably more... attuned to. The Ensemble Español digs into the, you know, the culture of Hispanic music and dance. I mean, there really is something for everyone, and it's been my experience. A lot of people have always brought their kids to Dance for Life. The kids are mesmerized by it. They love it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And it's also, we are now a no intermission event,
wow.
Which I also think is really nice, because it's 8 performances, 90 minutes. It moves so quickly. It's so high energy. It is, will get you out of your chair. It is so exciting.
Yeah. And perfect for kids too. So, you know,
yeah.
Who have, you know, sometimes have a limited attention span.
And each dance company does their specialty, correct? There's not one overall theme here. Everybody's going to be doing their own thing. Is that the way it works?
Correct. Everybody does their own piece that they've chosen to submit and that they are performing. And it's incredibly diverse and really exciting and fun.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. Now, in addition to the actual performance itself, for which tickets are $25 to $125 for the performance only. There's an after party that people can also attend, right?
Right. There is an after party at Venue 610, and a celebration ticket is $500. The proceeds all go to the Dancers Fund, so all of this will help these dancers in need with medical expenses. And the party is ridiculously fun because all of the dancers attend afterwards, and just watching them having fun on the dance floor is worth the price of admission. And Ted Grady, who's one of our co-chairs this year, has arranged to have, I think, four or five different catering companies in Chicago volunteering their time, and so the food will be extraordinary. A DJ, dancing,
yeah.
Food, drink, fun,
yeah,
and so also this phenomenal cause.
Yeah, so you can buy tickets for the performance and the after party, or you can buy tickets for just the performance. And the performance itself starts at 6 o'clock, is that right?
Yes.
So you're out of there by 7:30, 7:45-ish, yes. You know, somewhere in that neighborhood. It's not a super late night out, and it's incredibly entertaining. Most importantly, it is an incredible event that benefits so many people with the Chicago Dancers United. It's the perfect combination, a great night of entertainment, a great night of helping others. How can people get tickets?
You can get tickets by going to auditoriumtheater.org. You can also get tickets through the Chicago Dancers United website as well.
Okay. And what do you know that website by chance?
It is ChicagoDancersUnited.org.
Okay, super easy to remember. ChicagoDancersUnited.org or AuditoriumTheater.org for Dance for Life, Saturday, August the 13th, 6 p.m. at the good old Auditorium Theater, 50 East Ida B. Wells Drive. And Julie Berman Kaplan, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and be ready because I want you back with us next year in tutu and point shoes.
Okay, my hamstrings are ready at a moment's notice.
Perfect.
That's what I'm known for. Ready, nice warmed up hamstrings. 11:09, Dean Richards, Sunday morning.
I love this song. Or is it the
clothes you wear? For Schwani, because I feel like I'm neglecting him today.
You're always window shopping, but never stopping to buy.
Whoa. So shed those downy feathers and fly. A little bit. Dorks. We are just
finally played
dorks.
A song I know.
For a sad reason, though. The lead singer of the group called The Seekers, who did this song, Georgie Girl, and many, many other hits, Judith Durham, passed away. She was a huge, huge big deal in her native Australia. She is legendary in Australian music and sang leads on Georgie Girl and songs like I Know I'll Never Find Another You. Mm. That's another fantastic song by The Seekers. But songs like The Carnival Is Over, A World of Our Own. Do you remember those songs?
I don't remember.
Another You. I remember Another You, yeah.
I remember. I know I'll never find Another You, but maybe those other songs were big hits in Australia, perhaps, or the UK. But I only remember those two. But she had an amazing voice. She left the group to go out solo because they were so tremendously popular. That's why they started then. Do you remember the group that came along next called the New Seekers?
The New Seekers, right.
I Like to Teach the World to Sing.
Yeah.
So that was without Judith Durham, and she was doing a solo career. But later came back, reunited with her original bandmates, and they continued to perform until about 2019. And her voice, even in the much later concerts, was like an angel. She
still
so beautiful.
Wow.
She was 79 years old. So
just even in that Georgia Girl, such a distinct voice. You know, it's got that deep kind of rich tone. It's a very, you can almost think of it, it almost sounds like a guy at times.
Well, I don't know, like dimension filled.
Yeah.
It's not just like a person singing notes. I mean, there is a depth and a quality that adds extra meaning and interpretation, I think, to the song. Boy, do I ever sound like a critic now.
Listen to you.
I'm talking about...
Is it a complex voice?
I'm talking about the depth and dimension.
How many layers?
Blah, blah, blah.
How many octaves did she sing, Dean?
How about it, Chwani? This is when a song was a song, my friend.
There's a new world somewhere they call the promised land, and I'll be
such a nice, clean sound too, right? It's kind of like folk rock.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
If I would shut up, then you could hear it. Maybe if I should stop talking, then you could actually hear the song.
For I know I'll never find another you.
She does a solo here, I think.
There is always someone for each of us, they say. And you'll be my someone.
Isn't that beautiful? That's a beautiful, beautiful voice. Do you have the 45 on this one?
Oh, yeah, no, I don't have it. I think I may have Georgie Girl.
Though. I have Georgie Girl. It has the green and yellow label. I mean the red and... No, orange and yellow. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Orange and yellow label. I think that was Capitol Records at that time.
By the way, the Nerd Fan Club is going to be getting together.
Orange and yellow was the little spiral thing. Yeah, that was Capitol.
Capitol, right.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
Mm-hmm.
I think the... I think the catalog number was 7520.
Oh, that's a, yeah, that
no, you forgot the that you forgot the hyphen.
Oh,
7520.
Oh, that's right. That's right, because after 1966 they put the hyphens in.
Yeah, Andy, will you hit me on the head with
the
hammer?
It was the spring of 1969 when they put the hyphens.
Andy, if you have a sledgehammer, could you just hit me
and
on the head with the
parentheses?
I'm waiting for Lady Gaga to do a remake of those. By the way,
was that before or after they used the capital letters as opposed to the lowercase?
Okay,
so Dean, how you doing today?
So we're out of time. Is it 1 o'clock already? Where did the time go on today's show?
It's 1 o'clock somewhere.
Here, I know how to get him out of this. Hey, Jim, I hear you're going to be doing another play.
Oh, I love to talk about that.
You are?
Yes, I'm going to actually be doing some Shakespeare.
Wow.
Yes, look at me.
Look at you doing Shakespeare.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing The Tempest for the Green Man Theater Troupe in Elmhurst.
Which, by the way, was my first car.
You had a Tempest?
I had a Pontiac Tempest.
There you go.
Yeah.
Juan,
you remember the Pontiac Tempest?
I sure do.
Yeah.
I remember yours with the CB radio antenna on the back there.
That's Did you have a CB?
I had a CB in the car.
Why?
So I could talk to my friend who was driving in the car to me.
What was your handle?
Tell him your handle.
What was your
tell
handle?
Your handle.
Breaker whatnot.
No.
Hold on. I'm getting to it. Breaker whatnot. This is the Golden Creek.
Oh, come on. The Golden Creek.
That's the Golden Creek. Come on.
What's your handle?
Come on.
What's your 20?
Come on. What's your 20? I'm in the car right next to you, idiot.
I'm on Crawford.
I would be in my Pontiac Tempest and my friend Charlie.
What was his handle?
He was the Alaskan.
Oh, very ethnic.
I don't know why he was the Alaskan.
The Golden Greek and the Alaskan.
Nothing Alaskan about him. I don't know why he chose that. But he would drive around in his dad's car because he didn't have a car. And we went...
CB.
Like two idiots. We would drive.
And talk to each other.
Literally, we were next to each other driving down some street, talking to each other on our CB radios.
Oh, my God. Did you have a CB, Shawnee?
No, I didn't, but my friend did in his car. And not only did he have a CB in the car, he also had a speaker that was mounted underneath the hood. It was a VW.
Oh.
And I remember, you know, he would... turn a switch. It was, you know, a classic toggle switch there to switch from the CB to
the
speaker.
Was that the A3740 toggle switch?
It was the A3740C-5.
Yeah, okay. But that was realistic, right? From Radio Shack.
Yeah, I believe it. No, it was Allied Radio at the time.
Oh, Allied, okay.
It was Allied Radio at the time. And I remember in the wintertime we were driving and someone was shoveling their driveway and he drove by and turned on the speaker and said, "This is the way we shovel the snow, shovel the snow, shovel the snow." And you should have seen the look on that person's face.
Oh. So now this is way past Andy. You have no idea what a CB radio is.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, do you?
Oh, yeah. My dad was big into CB
radio. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I figured you're younger. You would the CB craze was more in the mid 70s with C.W. McCall, right?
Oh, yeah. First 45 I ever bought right there.
Got us a convoy.
A mile out of Chi-Town is mentioned. Chicago is mentioned in this song.
All over the pass. Bulldog Mac with a can on back and a Jaguar hauling ass.
Yeah.
He's 10 on the floor.
This is a remix version.
Yeah, what is this? This
must be the FM version where they can use language like that. That's not the real.
We are a mile out of Shaky Town. That's not the real. Big Pen, this here's a rubber duck, and I'm about to put the hammer down.
Now, wait a minute. So you were also a CB radio operator?
Yeah, I didn't have one in my car because I didn't have a car. I was too young, but my friend had one. And so we used to go to his house.
A bass unit?
A bass.
Oh, yeah.
Listen to you. You're a bigger nerd than I thought.
We were heavily into it.
A bass unit.
Charlie and I were heavily into this.
Make sure you got your ears on.
Yeah, that's right.
And what cracks me up now, I mean, it's not unlike people on cell phones now.
Right, exactly.
Where you're like right next to the person and you could easily talk to them without a device. Charlie lived right across the street from me. Yet we would talk.
Oh, yeah.
Either before we had the CB radios, we had like Woolworth's walkie-talkies.
Like the walkie-talkies, right.
And we would talk to each other after spending all day with each other outside playing.
Now what are you doing?
And now what are you doing? I just brushed my teeth. Breaker one night.
Breaker one night. Yeah. Yeah, my handle was Rocket Man.
Of course it was.
Why does that not surprise me?
Of course it was.
Yeah, because that was right in the midst. I mean, like I said, that was like, I think Convoy came out in what, 74, 75?
75.
Like yeah. So that was right in the height of Elton's popularity initially. So, but yeah, I mean, we used to, and the funny thing, scary thing was that we would get through to truck drivers, from his house.
Right.
And, you know. It was so weird to be talking to someone like, you know, an adult. We were like little kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing dangerous about that.
Not at all. Like, where do you live, kid? You know, there's a truck stop over by the O'Hare Oasis.
Well, this just gets more and more safe.
Now, Elton, do you remember what label the C.W. McCall record was on?
Andy, do you still have that sledgehammer?
No, but I'm going to go get one.
Wasn't it MGM?
It was MGM.
Thank you.
And
we had the
promotional label, which was just it had the MGM insignia, but it was just black and white.
No,
the blue and gold
with the lion.
Right.
Yes.
Right. But the promotional copy for radio stations only was a black and white label.
Come on, Dean. You have to be impressed that I nailed the MGM C.W. McCall.
So when is this Shakespeare play?
And will it be done via CB?
You know, nobody's ever done that before. A play on CB radio.
This way everybody can see it. Or hear it.
Breaker 1/9.
Everybody
Wherefore
could hear it.
Wherefore art thou? Well,
yeah.
Breaker.
It's like one big FaceTime call.
Yeah, I'm on the island.
Really, all these things are precursors to how we now live with our smartphones.
We've always been communicating. Yeah. It's just different formats. Yeah. No question
about it. My numbskull friend Charlie and I, we were the original distracted drivers.
There you go, right? Well, wasn't the whole idea of the CB was so that truckers could, like, talk to each other? Was it just they can talk or they could, like the song was saying, like, give them they hints tell, on, like, there's cops tell coming?
We mean Smokey?
Yeah, Smokey.
Yeah, there's a Smokey up
there's
ahead.
A Smokey. Because that was what? Because that was a state trooper? Was that the Smokey? Because they wore the hat?
They wore the Smokey the Bear hat.
Right, okay.
Yep. Gosh, we are dorks. Back then. But I think the serious intention was for the truckers to not only identify where police were in potential speed traps, but in case they got into, you know,
trouble.
Problems, emergencies, how are you going to call somebody and say my truck broke down?
Yeah, there was no cell phones.
Yeah, there was nothing like that then. So they needed a way to communicate with each other. So they must have loved that prepubescent young boys were like jumping on the radio.
And didn't you have to, like, so you went on a certain channel.
Yeah.
And then you did have to say breaker, right? Is that what got you in? Like, what was the salutation?
Yeah. Well, I mean, breaker is when you wanted to enter a conversation.
Right. Yeah, that's what I mean. So you would go to a channel, go breaker.
And
breaker.
I seem to remember that there was like one channel just for like
that was serious. Channel 9.
You couldn't goof around.
It was emergency.
On one channel, it was just for Channel 9, is that
yep,
what?
Channel
That's
9.
What it was.
Bum, yeah. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Channel 9 still having an impact on my life.
There you go.
After all these years.
But did you ever talk to other people or just your goofy friend?
Mostly it was my goofy friends. But yeah, no, we talked we became like kind of friends with truckers who were coming through.
I bet you did.
This sounds so unsafe and weird.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, we never met up with them or anything, but
we meet at the hot dog stand.
Like, yeah, let me go talk to a complete stranger.
Think about that.
Who's in and out of the area,
right,
in an 18-wheeler.
Oof.
That's I don't know why it, I guess it was a different time.
It was a more innocent time.
I guess it was a different time when my goofy friend Charlie and I.
Poor Charlie. Is Charlie still around?
Yeah.
Is he hearing this?
Maybe.
Poor Charlie.
He knows he's goofy.
Okay.
I'm not telling him anything he doesn't know.
The Alaskan.
Yeah. He was friends with me all these years. He's, he can't be that much straight and narrow. But we would go camping in Michigan. His dad had a cottage in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and we would go up there for weeks at a time in the summertime.
Did you bring your base model?
Of course, we brought the base
model. You brought your base model?
We brought the base model, but in my 68 Pontiac Tempest, I had my mobile CB radio.
Oh, geez.
So we could talk, to each other.
Hey, remember, those were huge antennas.
Huge whips.
On the cars. Yeah, those were huge antennas.
Yeah, we had the huge antennas. But we got to know other people up in Upper Michigan who were, that was kind of like their hobby.
Well, you had that radio station in your basement.
Yep.
And then you just moved it into your car.
Yep, that's right.
Now look at you.
And look at me. And look at me now.
Still talking on a CB, basically.
I still say we should do the show from our respective cars on CBs at some time.
I love the idea of doing a play on CB radio.
That would be a really cool idea.
We're onto something here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a really cool idea.
I guess that's pretty much what they did during the pandemic, though, right?
Yeah, so like a Zoom.
When they would
Zoom
do
plays.
Performances on Zoom. Same kind of deal. So really, seriously, what's the deal?
Yeah, so it's the Tempest. I'm playing the lead in Prospero, one of Shakespeare's great leads. I get to say the classic line, "We are made of such stuff as dreams are made on."
Oh, fine.
Yeah, I get to say that, so that's cool. So yeah, there'll be September 16th through October 2nd, 3 weekends.
And where will that be?
That will be in Elmhurst. I don't know the ex. I wish I didn't have the all the information, but it's at a theater at in a church in Elmhurst, a Methodist
church.
You
are quite the PR machine
on York's. Well, you didn't tell me you were gonna ask me about that. But it's on York Avenue in Elmhurst near downtown. But if I come on before next time, I will have more information. But go to greenmantheatergroup.org and you'll find some.
You can get all the information.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to it. I've been in one Shakespeare
play. You're Mr. Theater lately.
Well, radio hasn't panned out, so I've got to keep myself busy. All my emails are never returned, except for you. So I have to do something.
Andy, several people on our text line are saying that the emergency channel on CB was channel 19.
Oh.
Thus the term Breaker 19.
I'm going to look that up.
Andy is not buying that.
I'm not convinced, but I'll
Breaker
19. If I'm wrong.
Breaker
19. Andy Mazur throwdown.
Because isn't that in the song? Breaker 19.
Breaker 19.
Breaker 19, yeah.
Yeah. What do I know? Oh, my. Here's somebody saying
Channel 9. I'm looking it up right now. It says Channel 9.
Says Channel 9?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't test Andy on CB knowledge.
Please.
630 area code says, I drove a semi for 50 years.
Wow, 50.
And we enjoyed talking to people on the CB radio.
Yeah.
They kept us awake at night. Plus, people got enjoyment out of talking to the truck drivers back then.
Yeah, like where they're at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also talked to each other on CB radio to keep us awake at night.
So now is that gone and people are just using their cell phones? I mean, is the CB thing, I wonder if truck drivers even use the CB anymore.
I wonder. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I think, didn't C.W. McCall recently pass away?
He did.
He just died. By the way, the serial number is M14839.
On which one?
On the convoy on C.W. McCall.
Oh, very good. On MGM, yeah.
Yeah.
I can still picture it.
I mentioned before that in our elevator here in this building, 303 East Wacker, they have like a little TV monitor with flashing bits of information while you take your luxurious tour from the ground floor here up to floor 18. And usually you get two or three messages. I always learn something fascinating.
What did you learn today?
In the elevator. I'm going to take a break. And when we come back from all of that, I will tell you. And this is, by the way, if you're listening right now, this is the beginning of the new feature, What Dean Learned in the Elevator Today. It's going to be a new weekly feature.
Rolls right off the lips.
On the show. It's all coming right up. My beautiful day. Pops Rod back from vacation tomorrow morning, by the way. And of course, I will be joining him for my regular segment between 8 and 8:30, talking entertainment with Bob Surratt tomorrow morning on WGN.
Will you be reviewing the new Elton John penned musical, The Devil Wears Prada, which is having its official press opening? I saw it opening night in July.
Right.
But tonight is the official opening.
Well, when they do these pre-Broadway openings, these world premiere openings here in Chicago before they go to New York, they don't let the press in. I mean, I could have snuck in, I guess.
Right.
I could have just bought a ticket. I could have bought a ticket.
Right. But we're talking about Dean Richards here.
Buying a ticket.
When was the last time you bought a ticket?
Crazy.
So, Dean, how much haven't you paid for tickets over the years?
I've got the fiduciary rundown. I'd be happy to show you anytime. I actually did that. You know, when Mel Brooks had the producers here, I couldn't wait until to let the press in.
Right.
So I did go buy a ticket.
Good for you.
And they saw me in the audience, and they came and they asked me, would you please...
Oh, like to embargo, they're not to talk
like
about
it. It's like, they wanted me to leave.
They wanted you to leave, not talk about it.
We'll refund the price of the ticket.
I said,
I want to see it. I want to see what stage of progress it's in.
Wow.
Because while they're doing these pre-Broadway runs here, they're tweaking every single day.
Every day.
Every day they're making
changes. The show that I saw on July 19th, you probably will not see.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be different.
Yeah.
Huh? And they want to wait before they invite the press in to see it to where they're fairly certain that this is how it's going to be. Although, I've seen shows here in Chicago and then gone to see them in New York, and they're still completely different. They still make a lot of changes.
I saw when
once it goes to New York.
They did Aida, Elton's other musical. They did a run here. Bob Falls from The Goodman was directing it, and they had to revamp the whole show from when it first had an initial run in Atlanta, and it was really in bad shape, and so they hired Bob Falls to redo it. I saw that show four times over a month and a half, and I never saw the same show.
No.
And I saw it at different times. And then I saw the last one they did here. And to your point, I saw it on Broadway then, a month or 2 months later, and it was different then.
Still different. They do that all the time.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
They do
different
that all
songs,
the time.
New songs, yep. Taking songs out, moving songs from the beginning to the end.
That's why they wait to before they invite the press in. But they are inviting us in tonight to see the show. And I will be reviewing it both on Bob Surratt's show tomorrow morning, and also on WGN TV Morning News tonight. Now, see, I thought, because Elton John was just here the other day, that, you know, he's in Chicago. He loves Chicago. Chicago is a very meaningful place to him. This is where he did his rehab, famously. I mean, he's talked about that many times.
Yeah, Lutheran General.
That he would be spending some time here and stay for the opening of Devil Wears Prada. But you revealed to me earlier that he's not even in the country.
No.
He left already.
Yeah, he got to Chicago. There were open dates around his Friday show. So I assumed that he would be at the theater every day, to be honest with you. When I went on July 19th, his husband, who was a co-producer of the play, was there on that opening night. And I think he's been to a few different shows as well. But so Elton was here on Tuesday. He went to see Prada on Wednesday. He didn't go Thursday. Performed on Friday. And my sources tell me that about a half hour after the show was done or so, he flew from Midway on his plane from Midway and was going to fly all night to Nice.
Hmm.
So he was already... on his way out, airborne.
While some people were still on Lakeshore Drive.
I was still in the parking lot.
Right.
I was literally still in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And but he did say from the Prada castmates were at the show, and he met with them before. There's some pictures of them meeting. But he did say from the stage, he dedicated a song to them, and he said, good luck on Sunday. I will be with you in spirit. So that's how I knew that he was not going to be at the opening. As opposed to the time when Billy Elliot came to Chicago, if you remember that a few years ago. And
I interviewed him in front of the theater.
But the best part was, so I was going to that show, and Dean was right up by the curb because Elton's SUV was going to come up, and you were right there to get a little quick thing with him,
right?
And so you told me, come up here with me, stand with me, if you remember. So I standing next to you, and then the SUV stopped and the door opened right in front of us, and Elton walked out, and he just saw me and his face went like, what are you doing here,
security?
You again?
Can't get rid of this guy.
But I thanked you for that because you put me right in the front.
You were right in his face.
So the door, I mean, the door, it was as if you couldn't have planned the driver stopping any more perfect. Right. The door opened and there.
Right.
And he was like, yeah.
Well, I will. I'll be reviewing the Devil Wears Prada musical tomorrow morning on radio and TV. So, you know, be watching for all of that.
I am very interested to see your view on it. Yeah. I can't wait to hear that.
I'm a fan of the movie. So, you know, I hope that I'm going to also enjoy this thing tonight. But so here, I love learning new things.
You're a sponge.
I am a sponge. That's why I enjoy so much the elevator ride from the ground floor up to the 18th floor here at 303 East Wacker Drive. We didn't have that over at that dump Tribune Tower.
Again with the Tribune Tower.
You never learned anything over, how ironic is that? A place that's delivering a newspaper every day.
And there's no...
You never learned one thing in the elevator the whole time. Here, in this building, you always learn little new facts and figures on the television screen, which is in the elevator. And what I learned today is that the Earth is spinning unusually fast. The Earth is spinning faster than it ever has before.
Is that possible?
Yes, it is happening.
Wait, we need to get... Shouldn't buildings be crumbling? Shouldn't oceans be overflowing?
Well, here. In a 24-hour
period... Where's Schwani? Get Schwani in here.
In a 24-hour period, the Earth spins 86,400 seconds. That's what 24 hours is.
Is that what it is?
86,400.
They couldn't just say 24 hours.
400 seconds. But until the Earth has slowed down at one point, but now... since the year 2020, they have found that instead of the Earth slowing down as it has occasionally, the Earth is now spinning faster.
It's because of COVID.
Than any time. It's now spinning faster than at any time in the last 50 years.
I thought if it's not a perfectly thing, that everything goes nuts, that all our weather is off.
Well, that's what, don't you think some of the weather is off a little bit?
So you're saying that because we're going faster, that's the client.
I got to my floor before I
couldn't get the last paragraph.
I had to step off the elevator.
I wish we were on 25.
Go up to the 30th floor, which I did not want to do.
Maybe on the way down.
But it's the Earth. I mean, it's only going like in a year 1 second faster, but the people who are in charge of these kinds of things, they're concerned that that the Earth is indeed spinning faster.
Now, can we verify
than it, as it have before,
this information from the elevator? I mean, do we know where the elevator?
What more of a source do you want? What more of a reliable source do you want?
Is elevator information trustworthy?
I don't know how you could even question that.
My gosh. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, that I thought if anything, I didn't know that there was a little leeway for the Earth's revolutions.
Yeah, revolutions, yeah.
Not revelations. That this is a revelation, but I thought even the slightest thing would cause apocalypse and catastrophe. Well, apparently not.
Here's the thing. I mean, the elevator, all I learned was that the Earth was spinning faster than it ever has before. That's all that I learned there. So okay. I came in and looked it up. I looked it up and I learned more. And there are many, many articles on this. So the elevator was 100% true.
So in other words, that might be climate change?
So, well, it says that the Earth spinning faster right now may have no effect on our daily lives, but could have serious implications for GPS satellites, smartphones, computers, and communication networks, all which rely on extremely accurate timing systems.
That's why they
all of those things that we now depend, you know, are so much a part of our lives. Like we can't live without all of these things.
That's why I took a turn and almost into a dead end coming out of Soldier Field. My GPS was all off the other night. That's
because the Earth is spinning so fast.
Shwani, did you hear this?
I've been listening. Yeah.
Does this make sense to you? Don't you think that? Shouldn't tides be?
What is he? The science editor on the show?
He's the news guy. I trust him more than some paragraph in an elevator.
Well, did you also know that the moon is slowly moving away from the Earth?
See,
that will definitely affect.
Yeah,
did you learn that in the elevator?
No, I learned it. I don't know.
From now on, I'm not going to believe anything unless I see it in
the elevator.
I think that buildings should be crashing. The Ferris wheel out there at Navy Pier should be spinning off of its. I mean, this. I thought as soon as the Earth moves off of its axis, everything goes crazy.
Now, he didn't say it moved off of its axis. He said it was spinning at
a
different
rate.
It's
just spinning slightly. Like in a year's time, it's only spinning like 1.7% faster. Oh. It's a small amount, but it's an amount which cumulatively could have an effect on our lives. I mean, look at your behavior. There's got to be some explanation for that. 11:50 is the time. And this is Dean Richards Sunday morning on WGN. Elton Jim Toronto is here.
Hi ho, Dean Areno.
Because the big Elton John concert was the other night. We got a special insider's point of view of somebody who's seen the show 208 times.
Well, not that show.
We've seen Elton John 208.
Yeah, but not this farewell tour.
No.
I mean, it's not always the same show.
No.
Many of the same songs.
Say probably 90%.
Probably played your song every one of those times.
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah. Not all the time.
Is there any Elton John song that you're sick of hearing?
Daniel.
Really?
I love the recorded version.
Yeah.
But when he does it in concert, I just like, can we move on? Yeah. And I love the recorded version, but for some reason in concert, when he does it, I like it, but I'm always like, okay, next. Yeah.
So since you're close personal friends with him, and if he asks you, how can I make my concert better, would you tell him drop Daniel?
He did drop Daniel.
I don't like it.
In fact, on this tour at the beginning, before COVID, Daniel was in the set list, and now it isn't.
Oh.
So maybe he heard. Okay. I have to say, though, he's still... you were asking me off the air what were some of the best songs. I have to say, man, I'll tell you, for 75 years old, they play this song, Levon, which is not a very well-known song. It's from his Madman Across the Water album. But it's played on FM radio a lot. But they do an extended jam, the whole band. And I'll tell you, I mean, everybody on stage is over 70 years old. And in some cases, his percussion player, Ray Cooper, is 83.
Wow.
Yeah. And they... It's a good old throwback to the 70s of a jam. You know, right. You don't really see that much anymore.
Yeah.
Where the band is jamming and then everybody gets their moment and Davy Johnstone, the guitarist, does his guitar solo and Elton does his and the drum and everybody gets their shot and then they're all doing it together and it's a good 7 to 8. The song itself is about 4 minutes and then this jam is about a good 7 or 8 minutes of just pure instrumental.
Yeah.
And you don't really see that kind of...
That's what you go to a concert for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when you go to a concert, at least I don't want to hear a version like the
perfect
the recorded version.
Right.
I want to hear them go nuts.
Yeah.
I want to hear the musicians
having fun with each other and surprising each other.
Oh, you see that.
You can tell by the looks on their face when somebody does something unexpected.
Right.
And that, like, sparks the other musician, and that sparks somebody
else. And they're smiling at each other, like, did you see that? Yeah, they do that in Rocket Man, too.
I love that.
They have a little jam, not as extended, but there's some times in that where you could, and I've seen this enough where Elton will just do a little thing differently, and he'll play a little, like, he'll da-da-da-da-da, and then the guitar player will do the same on his guitar, and they'll go back and forth and kind of smile at each other.
That's the best.
Yeah.
I've been hearing so many great reviews of the show. And that's not always the case in a big venue like Soldier Field, you know, because it's so large. But they managed to pull it off. The next guest that we have on the show has also been playing, not like Soldier Field size arenas, but he's been playing massive arenas around the country. I'm talking about comedian Joe Coy, who not long ago was doing the Improv in Schaumburg and Zanies and all the small comedy clubs. And he just has taken off like a wildfire in his career. Was dating Chelsea Handler for quite a while. They just recently split up. But he's one of the hottest comedians in the country right now. He has a new feature film that's out this week called Easter Sunday that I wish I would have liked a little better, because I really like Joe's comedy. I think he's so funny. And personally, I like him very, very much. He used to come on our show all the time on the TV morning news. It reminded me of when Chris Rock did a movie. Chris Rock is not a good movie actor.
No.
He's a fantastic stand-up
comedian.
He's
tried so many times,
and that's how I felt when I saw Joe's movie, I'm sorry to say. But I still like the guy so much, and it was great to catch up with him. We haven't talked with each other during the whole pandemic, almost 3 years. So it was great when we were able to catch up on a Zoom.
Hello, Dean?
How you doing, man?
Oh my God! Long time no see.
I was trying to remember the last time that you were here on the show. It was before you became a big famous movie star.
Whatever. thanks to you, Dean.
How are you, man?
Oh, I'm good. I love it. I love talking. This is so cool to see you. It seriously is. I haven't seen you in so long.
It has been a long time because of, you know, the pandemic and, you know, a million different reasons. But I couldn't be happier for you for, you know, just everything going on.
Thank you.
So when you think back, I mean, you were here in Chicago all the time. You were here on our show all the time.
Yeah.
Like, what are your Chicago memories? Do you have, like,
my biggest memory was doing your show and then leaving and having to go through downtown. And I remember I was plugging. I remember I was on your show and I was plugging the Improv in Schaumburg. And I remember leaving your show and going downtown to get breakfast, and we drove past the Chicago Theater. And I literally told them to stop the car, and I walked underneath the marquee, and I made a video pretending that I was going to be at the Chicago Theater. I was like, you guys, catch me at the Chicago Theater. And I did this whole thing as if I was going to play the Chicago Theater. Wow. And it was all make-believe. I wasn't scheduled to play it or nothing. It was just... It's the most iconic theater. It's so beautiful. And I was just like, I got to be there someday. So fast forward to me selling it out like four times.
Yeah, it's amazing. And playing like huge arenas and things now.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. It's like how much everything has changed for the good for you. What I was curious about when I watched the movie
was how different it is
acting out your comedy as opposed to just being on stage in your comfort zone.
It was,
you know, talking about it. Was it weird at first?
It was so weird, Dean. Like, seeing certain scenes play out in front of me by actresses was like seeing my aunt and my mom go at it live. And it literally was like, I can't even explain it. There was one scene at the Balakbayan box where they get into a fight, and I cried at the end. Like, I was like, I started tearing up because it just brought me back to my childhood, and just seeing it was like, okay, I've seen that before. And it was weird. It was really weird to see that get played out live in front of me.
I wonder how in on the casting
your family was, because you talk about your son all the time, you talk about your mom, you talk about your family, and now you've got other people playing all these characters.
Yeah.
Did they say, did your mom comment on who played her and who played your son, et cetera?
I remember, they didn't. But you know what's crazy, Dean, is Steven Spielberg did. How cool is that? Steven had his hands on the casting, and then of course I had my hands on the casting. But the most important part about my mom's character is I told Lydia, who destroyed that movie. She was so good, the lady that played my mom. And I just told her, I go, the importance of my mom's character. It's like my fans are in love with my mom's character, and we have to do the best version of that. And I feel Lydia knocked it out of the park, Dean.
Talk to me a little bit about, all these new plateaus. I mean, you're at such a different level professionally now, which I guess is why you haven't come on our show.
Stop it, Dean. It was COVID, Dean.
Joe, our true friend would have found a way to come here masked up in a beekeeper suit or something.
Yes.
But I mean, truly, you have hit new professional plateaus. I mean, even your personal life is on front pages now. What's that like for you? Is it like a truly life in the fast lane kind of thing for you now?
It's everywhere I walk, people are saying something or at least notice me. And then I also have to here's a perfect example. I went to go to this place where they sell these amazing deep fried burritos. And I'm just thinking it's going to be nobody's there. It's with my family. I'm ordering. And then next thing you know, a group of people, like two different cars come up with Joe Coy merchandise on. And I'm like, okay, is this ironic? Like, how did you know? Come to find out the employee that was making my food called their family and the other Wow. employee called their family. And I'm just like, It's at that point where I got to be careful what I'm saying. I don't know who knows me. I don't know. So, yeah, it's weird now. It's like even when I don't think I'm being noticed, I'm being noticed.
Yeah, couldn't happen to a better guy, I'm telling you. That's like truly one of the nicest guys and funniest. And I couldn't be happier for all of your success, Joe. Congratulations on everything. We love you and we miss you.
I love you, Dean. Dean, can I call you or can we continue this conversation? I'll call you personally if you don't mind. I'd love to, I haven't talked to you in so long, Dean.
I would love it. All this rain that you're talking about that we're going to have today, it's going to dampen your plans for today.
Well,
Shawnee,
I can't control
you. Look like you're ready for a summer picnic.
I know. He's decked out. Like, he should have watermelon in his hand right now.
I have watermelon in the refrigerator.
Oh, there you go. See?
I actually do, yes.
So that was the stain on your shirt.
Is there anything better than a nice cold piece of watermelon on a hot day?
Very
especially
few
this
things.
Week, like yesterday?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That is that's a delicious summer treat.
And what watermelon. Is it? And what is it? You know, it's just like water and whatever that fruit
it's the
is.
Sugar in the fruit itself and that coldness and the liquid in it, the moisture, the water.
I was surprised to learn it has a high level of potassium.
Yes,
who would
it does.
Have thought that watermelon is anything more than water, and yet it has a high rate of potassium.
It's good for you.
Yeah, well, unless you can't have high potassium food. Yeah,
unless you're not near a restroom somewhere, because there is also that effect that takes place.
No, but do you like the red? I see. I like my wife likes the real, like, very ripe red.
Me too.
Yeah,
really?
So
like where it's soft?
Yeah.
No, not
when it's soft, but the darker the color,
the
more
the color,
red it is.
The sweeter it is.
The sweeter
I like
it's
it,
going to
be. I like my watermelon hard.
All right, I've got to go prepare my
No, so you know, like, it's a little white. Like, you know, like when you see it's a little white.
No, I don't.
Oh, I don't like that.
It's not sweet enough. Then.
No.
I like
it's
it.
Not ripe yet.
I like it to crunch.
The red crunches.
Yes, it does.
Really?
Yeah.
Shawnee, you know what else I love? A good, a nice peach in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
My wife likes
it. Yep.
I love a nice peach or nectarine.
Plums. Do you like plums?
Love plums.
Mm-hmm. I love grapes.
I love this all the summertime stone fruits.
Did you have the Rainier cherries this year?
I did. I picked up. I had a huge bag of it.
I love
and,
the Rainier
cherries. I just bought this new contraption I was talking about on the air that pits –
the cherries.
Are you serious? Oh, gosh, would I love that.
It pits the cherries. Now, they have these things that are like little... They almost look like pliers or something like that, where you put one cherry in and you squeeze the handles together and the pit shoots out. And that's one cherry. I found one that does six at a time.
Nice.
Six at a time.
No waiting.
And so you put your six cherries in.
And then you squeeze it?
You push a lever on it, and the six...
And where do the pits go?
They go into this little container.
Oh, they're not going flying.
No.
I thought you were going to start shooting people.
That would be more
people.
Fun.
Yeah, right? Yeah, like pit
be
fights.
More fun.
Cherry pit fights. Where was that when I was seven?
Seven? What about now?
Right, exactly.
I wish we'd had them then, because I had nothing but older brothers. You want to know how many cherry pits I had spit at me through the years? Right.
But those Raniers, they don't last long. It's like for a month or so.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the beauty of the season. So I enjoyed them, raw, just, regular.
Yeah.
And I made some cherry cobbler.
Oh.
I made cherry cobbler.
Do you make cobbler?
I made cobbler.
Cobbler is... Probably I love bread pudding.
Yep.
And a cobbler.
This is the first time
I will drive hundreds of miles for a
really?
Cobbler.
I'm gonna let you know that.
Make me a cobbler.
I make one.
Yeah.
I made cherry cobbler.
Oh.
This is the first time I've made cherry cobbler. I've done peach cobbler.
I'm not great on peach. But
I love
cherry.
I love a fresh peach.
What about a blueberry cobbler?
I guess I could.
Yeah.
It's not hard. I mean, it's super easy to
apple.
To make apple.
Oh, with the vanilla ice cream on it.
I did, Shawnee, you like strawberry rhubarb?
Combination? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a delicious combo right there. The strawberry and the fresh rhubarb, you mix that into a cobbler, and you put...
Anything in a cobbler.
Anything in a cobbler. You put it in a pie pan, basically. It's just a little a little bit of sugar. I don't put a lot in, but some sugar and cornstarch in with the fruit mixture.
And that's it?
And that's pretty much it.
So what's the cobble then?
The cobble is then you take like a biscuit mix.
Oh, okay.
And you put a few dabs of the biscuit mix on top of it. So it, it bakes a crust basically on it. So you've got the nice warm fruit.
Now, is that underneath. Different than a crumble?
Well, I think a crumble would be like if you put granola or something like that on top of it.
And what about a crisp?
That I don't know.
Because you've heard of that, right? Like an apple crisp.
Apple crisp.
So is an apple crisp and a cobbler and
what
a...
the difference is.
Yeah, cobbler,
maybe
a crisp.
Maybe it's a thinner crust, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a thinner, more like a pie crust than on top of it.
An apple brown
Betty. There's no crust underneath it, though. It's just it's fruit on the bottom.
That's the cobbler.
And the, I guess so. And the cornstarch in it kind of solidifies it into like a pie consistency.
And you just throw the fruit anywhere?
Just in the in the pie pan.
Yeah, right. No, but I mean, there's not. It's not like
not on the kitchen wall.
No. So the cherry one. So then, did you just literally pit your? Did you actually just pit the cherries
in my new contraption? I pitted the cherries
and just threw the cherries. Then
cherries
unpitted
right into the.
You didn't even cut them.
No, I didn't cut them.
Oh, wow.
I put them in a bowl first after I pitted them in my new contraption.
Your new contraption. Where did you get your contraption?
Wait, we have to do a break here, right? Don't we, Jack? We have to do a break. Jack's listening to B96 right now. Apparently, they're doing a much better show than we. I think we have to do a break, and then I'll tell you about all. All right, 12:14 is the time. Dean Richards, Sunday morning. On WGN, I guess it would be Sunday afternoon now and not Sunday morning. We'll get into the food time show coming up in a few minutes, talking some summertime recipes. I guess we got a little bit of an early start here, talking about
your cherry pits.
The cobblers, the pitting of the cherries.
Which during the break, you're telling me. So in other words, your cherry pitter works like a hole punch.
Yeah,
it kind of punches the pit out of the cherry.
Yeah.
And then into some little...
That's what a cherry pitter does,
yeah.
If you have the one that does a single cherry at a time, it looks like...
I don't think I've ever seen a cherry pitter.
It looks like... Well, it looks like an old-fashioned paper punch.
Right.
Where you would punch a hole in your notebook paper or whatever.
So
in this case, it's big enough that you can put a cherry in it. And it's the same principle. It's this little prolonged device that when you squeeze the handle, the cherry, that pushes the prolonged device into the cherry and pushes the
So the integrity pit. Of the cherry is intact.
Perfect.
Nice.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Do you have to what is that little?
The stem?
It?
You do have to take the stem out.
Yeah. Before you put it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
So they're not even halved.
You could cut them in half.
But when you pull it out, it's not. It's
like
still,
a cherry.
That is a great invention. Yeah. What do they think of next?
What will they think of next? It's American ingenuity.
Man, I'll tell you.
People put
this country down.
Look at
what we're doing.
Why we are the greatest country on earth.
Look what we're doing to cherries.
Because we've invented a cherry pitter.
Fantastic.
That takes 6 pits out at a time.
USA. USA. USA.
So that's one of my favorite. I mean, on the food segment today, I got a great recipe. Do you know who the actor is? Robert Pine.
Oh yeah, he's from. He was on Chips.
He was on Chips,
and he's the father of Chris Pine.
He's the father of Chris Pine
from Star Trek.
Exactly right. Yeah. And he's a very talented actor all on his own. He's in a movie that's going to be opening in a couple of weeks.
Is he 100 years old?
No.
I mean, God, he's still in movies?
No.
He was the father. I think he was
60, 70.
He's
got to be. He's probably around 70.
Really? Really? That's all?
But very, extremely distinguished.
Oh, yeah.
Like his son, Chris Pine, extremely handsome, dashing, charismatic. Like, you know, really super nice guy. I had a great chat with him.
He was the boss on show. He was like there. He was there.
He was the, like, sergeant?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Right. But I did an interview with Chris Pine a couple of months ago, and I've been asking celebrities for their favorite recipes that I might recreate.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
On my TV cooking segment, which I do every Wednesday at 9:30 in the morning. And Chris Pine gave me a fantastic recipe for lemon fettuccine. It's pasta with some olive oil and lemon zest.
Yeah.
And a little bit of lemon juice.
Very light.
And I cooked it on TV. It was great. I've made it at home a couple of times since then because it's a really nice summer pasta dish. It's very, very light. So I asked when I interviewed Robert Pine, I told him that your son gave me a fantastic recipe. I said, are you also a cook? Do you have a recipe like this? And he did. He turns out he's a cook, too.
How funny.
And he gave me a recipe for gazpacho.
Oh,
he's
nice.
Famous for gazpacho, the cold tomato soup.
Yeah.
When I've made it, has green peppers and cucumbers and fresh tomatoes. And I put some V8 in it. Just it gives it a tiny bit of spice and a little bit of texture when I've made it. I happen to like it spicy, but you can certainly make it without. But he gave me a great recipe for that, and which got me thinking, what are some of the other great summer recipes? So that's what I want to open up the phones for that. Stuff that you'd love to make in the summertime, whether it's on the grill or just a nice salad or, you know, whatever it is, 312-981-7200. I've got a $100 gift card for the Barbecue Authority in Lyle. If you go to bbqauthority.com, you can shop there and learn more. But we've got a $100 gift card that we're going to give away for our favorite recipe that we get here.
Oh, nice.
In this next segment. So if you've got a nice summertime recipe, give us a call right now, 312-981-7200. We're going to take down the phone numbers for everybody who calls in. And favorite recipe, we'll call you back and we'll give
you. But you got to earn this.
You got to earn this.
This isn't just a fifth caller stuff.
You got to
bring the bacon, the goods.
You come here on Sunday morning, you can expect to do a little heavy lifting.
Listening is just the beginning.
Yeah. We can't do it all here. Clearly, if you've listened to the show, we cannot deliver the goods.
Especially over 4 hours. I mean, come on.
And especially toward the end of the 4 hours.
Yeah, you notice how the last hour is always, okay, let's get some callers in. You don't really have callers until about noon.
Well, we're busy. We're busy with other things earlier in the show. So anyway, we're going to have some fun with some recipes here at 312-981
7200, our telephone number. A quick break, and we'll get to all of that right after this.
You always were known as Dean Richards, King of the Dead Air, and so it's nice that you're bringing that up again.
You're talking to me. We're chatting during the break. Normally, I'm in here by myself, but you and I are chatting about things when I should be paying attention to the show.
Yeah, but no one does dead air like you.
That's a lesson to you, young broadcasters out there. By the way,
pay attention.
No matter who is in the studio, pay attention. Don't be distracted by what's going on.
Oh, if they can only hear what we talk about.
No matter how gossipy and it is behind the scenes. 12:23, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Did you say that you had a summertime recipe?
Well, I was just saying yesterday, in fact, we love to watch America's Test Kitchen on good old Channel 11 every Saturday. And they had a recipe that was very simple, and I would just go on. I can't give you all the ingredients, but I can tell you what it is, and you can go on their website. But it was a broccoli salad with avocado dressing.
Yum!
And it just I actually videotaped it so that we can go back and
It raw broccoli?
No, she just cooked it, boiled it very quickly.
Okay.
Just to soften it a little.
All right.
She used the florets as well as the stem, interestingly,
yum,
to give it some texture, and added a few other things, but then made this avocado dressing.
Yum.
To put on it. And
that
it just
good.
Really was, it looked great.
I was watching one of the cooking shows on Channel 11 yesterday, too. And it was
Scandinavian?
No. It was the Patty is her name. I don't know her last name. She does a Mexican cooking show.
Oh, right. Yes.
She's delightful.
Yeah.
You just want to give her a big hug. She's so delightful. And she was making some things, but she took some broccoli and cauliflower.
I love that.
She cut it in slices, not in florets.
Oh.
But she goes
down.
Straight down and cut it into maybe half-inch slices. Puts it on a sheet pan, and she baked it like 475 in the oven for 20 minutes. And it super roasts these vegetables, brings out the flavor. They look delicious. They were a little char baked.
Well, thanks to
you. Which I like.
Thanks to you. We bought the air fryer.
Oh, good.
And what we do, we bought the same one, the Black & Decker one that you talked about a couple of years ago.
It's a good machine.
And we do that. We have, what we do is we cut the broccoli and the cauliflower, and went online, just found a quick thing, little olive oil, some salt and pepper, and just put that in the air fryer.
Perfect. Yeah.
And it roasts, and it, you know, what's great about it fries. You know, it's less calories, but it fries the florets, so they get that crispy.
They get a little crispy and delicious.
And sometimes when we've wanted even more, we've put some in the air fryer, and then we've baked some, and it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's so tender.
It's delicious. The
juice, the juiciness.
Cauliflower and the broccoli together.
Yeah.
It's a nice combination.
And you do that to Brussels sprouts, too.
And she made it, Patty on TV, made it with the sort of cream sauce.
Oh, nice.
Like a little cream sauce. And I was like, that would be a nice summertime side dish. This is Carrie calling in on WGN. Carrie, you're on. Hello.
Hey, Dean. Hey, Jim.
Hey.
That's Patty Vasquez, by the way. Different Vasquez than the regular one, and it's Patty's Mexican Table.
Right. I don't think it's Vasquez, though, because it was
kind of an Americanized
name. Right.
Yeah, you're right. But it's Patty's Mexican Table.
Yeah.
You were talking about watermelon and summer recipes. I was in Boston last year and had the most amazing salad I've ever had in the summer. And I've recreated it several times. And the cool thing is you can do many different versions. And it's basically all you need is any kind of lettuce you want, arugula or a spring mix, watermelon, some sort of nut of your choice. Walnuts work good, pecans, whatever you want. The key thing is burrata cheese, which now you can get anywhere.
Burrata cheese and watermelon.
Yep. And then just a very basic balsamic vinegar.
I was going to say balsamic on that would make it over the top. Yeah.
And you can do all kinds of variations. You can have mango. Some people actually grill I just do too simple. I don't grill it, but you can grill. Some people grill the watermelon, grill the mango, put it all together, make it a little warmer. But the burrata, when you cut into it, it melts on it. It's just absolutely delicious and refreshing.
And how does that mix with the sweetness of the watermelon?
I bet it would be fantastic.
Well, if you use arugula, it's kind of spicy, you know, and the balsamic is salty, so it all just comes together.
Well, you're talking about the burrata and the watermelon, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
I think it's fantastic. I put, when I make caprese salad, whether it's with burrata or just the regular mozzarella ball, I always put, I usually do it with fresh tomatoes, but I always put like a balsamic glaze or a little balsamic dressing with the olive oil. And the sweetness of the balsamic goes perfect with watermelon.
You could add tomato to this. You could add any, like I said, I usually do it with toasted walnuts. And it all just comes together, and it's in the summer. It's just, if you have really good fresh watermelon, it's just amazing.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference. I've done something similar, and I've toasted pine nuts and put on there.
Sure.
Pine nuts, sometimes can be a little expensive. So
they're expensive. I use walnuts.
That's what I do too. I go for the walnuts or like a slivered almond that I toast. Yep. I always toast them because it brings out a fantastic nutty flavor in them, and it gives it a little crunch at the same time on top of it.
Yep, it gives texture. Yep, between the softness of the fruits, the nuts, and the crunchiness of the arugula or whatever green you want to use.
Listen to us foodies here. Listen to us foodies talking about the complex layers.
Yeah, just three guys sharing recipes.
Yeah, exactly. Is that wrong? Is there something wrong about
drinking champagne coolies?
I hope
and
you'll.
Jim, by the way, I don't care what you pay for Elton tickets.
Thank you.
I don't care either.
Yes, you
do. I don't care either. I was just curious what final night tickets were going for.
I'd like
for.
To know what you do for a living, though, when you're not going to concerts.
So would I.
Yeah.
So would I.
He's going to want to find out after Elton retires. That's going to be the
answer, too, actually.
That's going to be the real question. Once Elton retires, what's he going to do with his free time?
Hi, Dean.
Oh, jeez. I knew I shouldn't have given you my phone number. Thanks, Carrie. We appreciate that. More recipes coming right up. It's 12:38. Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. Our award-winning All Things Edible program. Taking your summertime recipes down. Things to enjoy when the weather is as hot as it has been and is going to be. On the text line, 708 area code, saying, I started this 10 years ago to try to cut down on beef. I now mix 1 pound of ground beef with 1 pound of turkey, tablespoon of Italian seasoning, 2 teaspoons of garlic powder, mix it very well, divide it into four, and make 4 half-pound burgers. I throw it on the grill, and they're delicious, and probably lower in fat as well, I would guess, because of the turkey. Text also says, I just made 100 of them for vacation Bible school final picnic yesterday. That is a lot of ground beef that you're making there, my friend. Here's Mike. You're on WGN. Hello.
Oh, no, nice soggy Sunday.
Yes, it is. Speaking of that, by the way, Dave Schwann's in our newsroom. And before we get to your call real quick, this severe thunderstorm warning is definitely affecting the Chicago area, right, Chwani?
Yes, two counties, Dean, Kankakee County and Lake County, Indiana. The severe thunderstorm warning going until 1:17. This is a warning again for Kankakee County and Lake County in Indiana. And we also have a flash flood warning for Cook and Will counties until 3:30 this afternoon.
All right, so you guys in the newsroom will keep track of all of that, and we'll have updates throughout the afternoon. So what you cooking there, Mike?
I had cooked up some chicken yesterday, and I'm doing this recipe today, so it's fresh in my mind. I've got some barbecue chicken left over, and I make a penne pasta with the leftover chicken. What I do is I start with about a half cup of olive oil in a big Dutch oven on the stove, and I put in some fresh garlic and rosemary and some sea salt.
I like that already.
And I let that simmer a little bit. Then I throw in some either mushrooms or pea pods.
Nice.
I've got both today, so I'm using both.
Nice.
And you can use summer squash
or anything, any other kind of vegetable, cauliflower, broccoli, anything. And I add the penne pasta to the olive oil, and the chicken I debone, and I leave the skins. I use the skin, too, in the recipe.
Sure, yeah.
You just get that extra flavor.
Of course, yeah.
And then I combine it all in that big Dutch oven. You know, I use cast iron.
Yep.
And I add the chicken to it after I reheat it in the microwave. You can get rotisserie chicken if you don't have barbecue chicken. And it works really well. And then I top it off with Parmesan. And
yeah.
It depends on who I'm serving. But it's either cilantro or parsley on top.
Right, right. Do you put any other sauce on it, or it's just the...
No, I use the olive oil as...
Olive oil,
as
yeah.
The sauce.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's very light.
I would imagine some of those vegetables give off a little bit of juice there as well.
Especially in the garlic in the olive oil cooking, simmering.
Yeah.
And the rosemary.
Oh, it's super really flavorful. Super, super flavorful. But if you're putting zucchini in there and, you know, some of the other vegetables, those are giving off their natural juices as well.
Summer squash, you know, I just simmer that a little bit in the olive oil.
Yeah, I'll bet that's good cold,
it softens
too.
Up.
I'll bet that's good cold, you know, or like room temperature, you know, to serve. I'll bet that's good, like room temperature, you know, the next day.
It is. It's actually very good cold. And then if you do... You know, I usually make a whole box of penne pasta.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like a, you know, a masticholi.
Right, right, yeah. And it's enough serving and leftovers.
The next day in a bowl, but then fresh Parmesan on top.
It's good stuff. I love that. I love that. They're making good use of leftovers and all those good vegetables for summertime as well.
And it is. Whatever you have on hand or whatever's at the market.
Yeah.
That's, you know, a lot of times, like I said, you can find rotisserie chicken that's already been cooked. It's not being heated. It's in the refrigerator section. You just bring it home, debone it, de-skin it,
exactly.
Take the fat off.
Oh, I do that all the time.
Use the skin and the meat.
Yep, I do that. I do that all the time. I use those rotisserie chickens are super handy. Yeah. You know, when you're busy sometimes and you don't have time to
This is a super easy recipe. I mean, and you can do whatever you have on hand. You know,
sounds
all the
good.
Vegetables.
Mike,
like I said, I'm using pea pods and mushrooms today.
Right, right. Mike, I appreciate your recipe. Thank you so much. Hi, Kathy. You're on WGN. You got a nice little salad here,
I
hear.
Dean. Yes, indeed. This is, you know, and I don't know if this is part of Robin doing her retro recipes on the morning news. But this is a recipe for taffy apple salad that my aunt started doing in the late 60s when Cool Whip came out.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, and it was one of those things that we were at we needed to go to a potluck, and I said, you know what, about taffy apple salad? It was such a huge hit. I have made it multiple times this summer. What it is just taking a large can of crushed pineapple, draining it, and after it's drained, mix it with some miniature marshmallows. And from that juice of the pineapple, you add an egg, some flour, vinegar, and sugar. Mm-hmm. You know, you cook it until it's thickened. This is the thing. Retro recipes, you always have to plan ahead.
Right.
So this is not a same-day thing.
Yeah.
But you put it in the refrigerator overnight, and the next day you just take that sauce and Cool Whip and marshmallows, and you cut up some apples with the peels on, so that makes it really easy.
Right.
And some chopped peanuts, and I'm telling you, it is delicious.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so it's probably not calorie friendly or whatever, but you know what? It kind of gives you that feeling of times gone by, right?
It's very nostalgic, and you don't have to have a giant portion of it.
Exactly. I mean, I am amazed at how many people, I brought it to my sister-in-law's, and everyone just went crazy over it, and I went, okay, it's been a while since I made this.
Yeah.
Let's continue it. And yeah, everyone loves it.
Yeah. Now, see, if Robin was making this, there would have been some Jell-O would have been involved somehow.
And hot dogs.
Hot dogs, and Paul would have all washed it down with an old style.
Exactly. And enjoyed it.
That's Robin's. If you've never seen Robin's retro cooking segments, that's basically what it is. I love your recipe. It sounds really refreshing. A really nice summer dessert salad. Kathy, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks so much.
Have a great day. This is Pete up next. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, Dean. A few years ago, or a year ago, I don't remember, I gave you a complete breakdown as how to cook everything on a Weber at once.
What do you mean?
How to cook potatoes, corn on the cob, all that stuff.
Okay.
But I never got around to telling you about the super simple salad.
Okay. Super simple salad, you say?
Yes. Okay. It has two food ingredients. It
doesn't get much simpler than that.
Bib lettuce and green onions.
Huh.
All you're going to do is after cleaning everything, you're going to slice the green onions, white and green, add that to the lettuce. You don't want too many onions. You're going to have to come up with your own ratio on that, really. But the dressing is nothing more than vinegar and sugar with maybe a pinch of pepper.
Interesting. So it's just the lettuce and
onions
and the green onions, right?
Uh-huh. And a sweetened vinegar.
Okay. Like maybe a rice vinegar might be nice with that.
You could do a rice vinegar, but you'd still want to add some sugar to it.
You still want more. Okay.
You need a pinch. You need a pinch of cane in there. I've tried different vinegars. It doesn't seem... You start out with a vinegar. Oh, this is going to be plenty sweet. And you put it together.
Still need some.
Open up the jug of sugar, grab a pinch for a whole bowl of it. And your proportions are going to be as needed as how much you want to make for how many people. Basically, you don't want the lettuce just floating in vinegar. You just want a drizzle.
Right.
And it is light. Is delicious. The sweet and the onions work with each other and kind of against each other, making a good contrast in the mouth. And then you've got the lettuce. And the greatest thing about this was when my mom was doing this, she'd just walk across the driveway to our little tiny garden patch and pick everything she needed.
Yeah, that's the best. That's the best when you can go outside and pick your ingredients for a nice salad.
And fix it up the same day. Yeah,
yeah. Fix it up minutes after you pick it. You will realize, the flavors, how intense the flavors can be. That sounds fantastic. Like crazy simple.
I know it's crazy simple, but it has a unique flavor and guests would expect it when they came over after the first time because it's for some reason other people couldn't make something that simple. I don't understand it.
Yeah. I made a salad yesterday. I've made it on TV. I don't know if I've talked about it on the air, but in the summertime, I like to make a garbanzo bean salad.
Mm.
It is, I take a pint of cherry tomatoes. Cut them in half. I take a can of garbanzo beans. I think it's like 15-ounce can, something like that. Rinse them and set those aside. I take one of those English cucumbers, without the seeds in them. Or I guess you could just take a regular cucumber too. But I like to take the seeds out. I run a spoon. I cut it in half and then run a spoon through it to take those big horsey seeds out. And I cube that up. And yesterday I had a Vidalia onion. I cut that up, and I put all those ingredients into the salad. So the cherry tomatoes, the garbanzo beans, the cucumber, and the Vidalia onion. You can use any kind of onion that you like. I just happen to have a Vidalia in the house with some olive oil and red wine vinegar. Oh, and feta cheese. I had some feta cheese also.
Oh, must add that to this mix. There's only two things I didn't mention. If you don't have green onions, if you got a Vidalia, that's a good substitute for this little salad I was talking about.
Yeah.
And I love your recipe that you just gave, but I'm one of those people who can't handle indigestible seeds.
Okay.
So I'd be scooping out every one of those little tomatoes.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't really want to get deep into medical with you, but
I understand.
A condition known as diverticulitis.
Diverticulitis, where those little seeds get caught and they can be very painful.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Same with, and a weird, someone mentioned, I think I heard someone mentioning using peanuts in
right.
one of their recipes.
Yeah,
I'd be substituting because peanuts, when you chew them, they don't grind down.
Right.
They shatter.
Yeah.
And they're as painful as seeds.
Yeah, I know. I know for diverticulitis sufferers, those things are tough. So yeah, scoop out the seeds of the tomatoes, definitely. But I'll tell you what, this is a delicious salad. I took it over to a friend's yesterday, and it was a hit, huge hit. It's a delicious salad.
I was going to say, you had to have it in a sealed, opaque container, or it wouldn't have made it to your friend's house.
That would be good snacking in the car, that's for sure, right?
Snacking in the car, or don't walk down the street with that in a bag. I think it would smell enough that people would be following you. It sounds like it would have a delicious odor to it.
Yeah,
too.
It was pretty good, I got to say. I appreciate your recipe, Pete. Thank you very much for the call. Yeah, so what we're doing is we're just getting some, you know, nice summertime recipes that are just, you know, great for summer, where you don't want to heat up the oven, certainly, where you just want something that's kind of nice and, you know, refreshing. 312-981-7200 is the telephone number. I had talked about how we got started with this was that actor John Pine has a new movie that's coming out, and I interviewed him. And I asked him for a summer recipe, and he gave me a fantastic gazpacho recipe that he has cooked for his family, including his son, Chris Pine, for years. And he shared it with me, and I don't have his exact recipe right in front of me, but I do remember it, where it's some really great tomatoes, like a vine-ripened tomato that you can I do peel them, so the skins are not in the gazpacho. I peel them, you know, I just make a little X with a knife on the tomato, throw them in a little boiling water real quick, just for not even a minute. And the skins come right off. They peel right off. And then I cut them in half. I do take the seeds out and I chop them up. I take the cucumbers that I also seed and I chop it up. I use, in this recipe, there was red bell pepper. There was red onion. There was green pepper also in it. All of this, just chopped up. And all of it then, by the way, going into a blender along with some tomato juice. That's what John Pine used. When I personally do it, I use V8. I use V8 or Clamato. And it's a slightly more complex flavor, but his recipe used a little bit of tomato juice. I'm going to post the full recipe once we have it on the air. But it gets you put it in the blender, but you don't blend it to death where it's liquefied. I like to feel some chunks in it. So I just give it a few pulses until it breaks down a little bit and it becomes soup-like. And then some balsamic vinegar goes in it. Some Worcestershire sauce goes in it, salt and pepper, of course, and it's delicious. You know, you put it in the fridge till it gets nice and ice cold, and it is a fantastic, this cold gazpacho soup is just one of my favorite things of summertime. You can put a little Greek yogurt, tiny just dabble of a Greek yogurt on top of it, or sour cream, if you want. We'll post all the recipes up at 312-981-7200. Jim's been hanging on with a salad recipe. Oh, boy, we've got a lot of salad recipes here today. Hi, Jim.
Oh, yeah, how you doing, Dean? Great show.
Thank you.
My recipe is pretty close to what you got going there. I use garden-ripe tomatoes. I use cucumbers, which I don't peel completely, a little bit of the skin on them.
Me too.
And Vidalia onions, but my trick is I put it in a metal bowl.
Okay.
I slice it all up, put it in a metal bowl, toss it all around. Then I pour zesty oil and vinegar Kraft dressing
on it. Oh, okay.
And put it in the put it in the freezer for 10 minutes, bring it out, and voila, it's done.
Ice cold, delicious salad like that would be so good.
And it's so easy and so fast. It's like zip and it's done.
I love that. I love that.
There you go.
I love that. Jim, thank
you. It all sounds good. I'm going to have to go get some lunch. I'm getting hungry.
Well, that's the thing. This segment always makes everybody so hungry, but that's okay. Jim, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Producer Jack is going to pick our winner, and we're going to be sending out that $100 gift card for Barbecue Authority in Lyle. Visit bbqauthority.com to shop and learn more.